May, meeting was scheduled for 10 o'clock. It's 4 minutes past 10. I'm not waiting for members. They are grown-ups. They must, and they're supposed to be disciplined. That's why we are deployed in Parliament. Excuse me. Welcome at this meeting of the Select Committee for Finance. We're continuing in our series of meetings with the provincial treasuries, as we do every year. I've got two apologies from the Honourable MEC Ivan Mayer from the Western Cape. The Western Cape Cabinet meeting is being conducted in Knysna today, and the Treasury MEC is attending the meeting because he must do a presentation regarding the disaster and how the Cabinet will deal with it, etc. So there's a written apology and you phoned me. But he told me the HUD will be present, but I don't see the HUD in Western Cape. Mlanga is here. Welcome to them where the sun rises. Lovely, beautiful province. And we're waiting for Gauteng. The MEC for Gauteng is on the road between Cape Town International Airport and the precinct of Parliament. And you know the traffic in the city there, but they call Cape Town. So the other apology is for Honorable Mohai. Honorable Mohai has been elected as the Chief Whip of the NCLP, and Wednesday there's a meeting also starting at 10. They call it the Chief Whip's meeting, and he's there. But welcome, MEC. I've just talked about you on the road, so welcome here. So Honorable Mohai will join us hopefully when they are done with their meeting. That is the two official apologies that I have received. Can we accept the apologies? Yes. That's it, Honorable Matema. Welcome in the meeting. Okay, just use the microphone, please.
Yeah, to put a face to a name for those of us who are here for the first time. You said you meet with the Progressive Treasury. We will be honored to know. I know Honorable Chrissy from Gauteng. May we have the honor of knowing the others. So please.
When we give the agenda, every team will announce themselves. Each MEC will introduce the delegation appearing before us. To be effective and efficient, we are Western Cape. We will take when they arrive.
The Honourable Farad is also on his way. He's, you know, he just needed to go somewhere else quickly, but he's coming. He phoned me a while ago, apparently he's also somewhere in the traffic. I'm merely conveying what I heard. Thank you.
Yeah, I won't remark on that, but thank you for informing us. Welcome to the Honourable Mutara from Gauteng, on the right-hand side, is also the whip of the committee. Honourable members, you must have the following documents. The presentation from the National Treasury, the new document, and then the presentation of the three provinces that was also emailed to you, plus the research document prepared by Esther, and thank you to Esther, that gives us a good picture of the provinces we are dealing with. Western Cape just arrived. Honourable members, the reason for this series of meetings is that the committee needs to exercise fiscal oversight over the provincial government departments and their respective public entities in line with its strategic goals and the requirements of the PFMA. The committee must assess the extent to which the province finances are in a good standing and whether the provincial treasuries comply with the PFMA. But our main objective is good governance. We hear it the same story every year, but we have to repeat it. That is what we are here for. good governance and sound financial management, compliance with the legislation, constitution, EFA, treasury regulation, the whole matter of accountability, fighting corruption, fighting state corruption, the whole matter issue of monitoring and evaluation, and we repeat it every year, that must also be taken to the lowest level of governance and government, specific in regions, and be more decisive on consequences for financial misconduct, as stated in section 81 to 86 of the PMMA. We're also looking at provincial public entities. You'll find it in the research document prepared by Esther. Thank you for that, Esther. I can inform also the provinces that's here, because every province that comes here, especially the rural provinces, asking for the review of the equitable share formula, yes, it's on the cards. It's on the agenda. Budget Council is the 14th of July, maybe we will hear more from it then. Seeing that Western Cape is present, the HUD, the MEC apologized, I've got his letter, he's phoned me. We'll first go to the National Treasury, Mrs. Gareka, to take us through. Now, the Treasury document of the members, ladies and gentlemen, MECs, is a very comprehensive one, with lots of detail. Also looking at the risks, etc. So when we come to the province, you don't have to go to the figures again. The Treasury is dealing with that. You zoom into your accruals, wasteful fruit, less expenditure, things like that. Your fiscal position. Some provinces, red lights are flickering. It was here already. We're calling them back in October, beginning of October. They come back. We go to monitor them. Serious. Your economic growth in your province, Western Cape, is having an excess of tourists. It's fantastic. I wish I could get it from the Northern Cape, but they fly over Kimberley to Joburg. They land there, and there they are. In the fraternity of Gauteng. And Gauteng is getting own revenue. You'll see it in the figures. Western Cape's own revenue, Gauteng's own revenue is very good. That's a good story. But also we are here, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, MECs, to learn from each other good practices, best practice. What are you doing that Free State can learn from you? So we are here to support. We're not here to fight the provinces. We are here to enhance intergovernmental relations. The day that works 100%, we will have lesser problems in South Africa. Because all the engagements we are doing, this thing of IGR comes up. And we are a unit in Spain. With that introduction, Mrs. Gareka, over to you. Take us through. I'm giving you 30 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Morning, Honorable Members, MECs, HODs, and colleagues. Going straight to the introduction, National Treasury manages the fiscal risks in the provincial state of government in the following week. We coordinate the provincial budget process through benchmarking provincial budgets, but before that, we go through the budget submissions of provinces from first draft until the final one, after they table their budget, and go to their provincial intakes. But also through the benchmarking process, we focus on the social services and other concurrent functions to check that those non-negotiable items have been adequately funded. We are required to continuously monitor and analyze provincial spending, and including publishing, we do publish expenditure reports quarterly in terms of Section 32 of the PFMA. We do also conditional grant monitoring and reporting, and also the roll-up coordination process of funds that have been transferred already to the provincial sphere of government. and also we ensure compliance and intervention, including withholding and stopping of funds in accordance with the Division of Revenue Act. Also part of monitoring, we do provincial, we go do visit provinces. The other one, we do it after the first quarter spending. And the infrastructure visits, we have just concluded it now, I think a week or two ago. After all this process, we do brief the minister and MSCs at Budget Council in terms of what are the fiscal rules. And where provincial treasurers identify gaps, we do provide capacity, we do provide training and support to provincial treasurers. The next slide just shows the adjustments to budget, provincial budget. I won't go into the details, because I think the next slide will show that in detail in terms of where exactly the adjustment went to and how have provincial departments spent, because some of them, they could not even spend the amount of money they received through adjustment budget. The next slide shows all provinces in terms of how the spending was, and also in other things, provinces spend 99.2%. Housing spent 99.7% of their budget and underspent by 263. Mpumalanga spent 99.1% and underspent also by 363 million. Western Cape has spent 99% and underspent by 549 million. Going to the details now, also looking at personnel numbers. We know that there's been an increase in education numbers in Gauteng, but it's expected because they do have kids, the increased learner numbers, so therefore we expect them to continue to increase the personnel numbers in education. Mpumalanga, there was just a slight increase also there. Western Cape, there was a decline. A little bit of decline when you compare March 2016 to March 2017. With regards to health, there's been more than 2,000 increase on personnel in Gauteng. Mpumalanga kept the number constant at 20,146. And with regards to Western, there's been a slight decrease in the personnel numbers in health. Going to Gauteng now, looking at how the province spends. I've already indicated that they spend 99.7%. And with regards to education, there was a small underspending, which was, I think, partly on capital, and also in their case, education, they overspent on compensation of employees. But I think we'll go to the details in the later slide. With regards to health, they overspent by 398 million. Mostly, the overspending was on compensation of employees. They overspent the compensation of employees by 927 million. And we know that that overspending was mostly on the central hospital services and the training program. In their case, also they had pressures on medicine. They overspent on medicine, and also they've got an issue of the medical legal claims in their case. However, I think they also underspend on a little bit on cases. Legislature, well, they've underspent by 9.7%, but mainly it's on goods and services. Corporate services is also goods and services. I think the department that we are also concerned about is the human settlement spending.
Yeah.
They did underspend by 119 million, but however, I think what we are mostly concerned about is that 1.2 billion was spent in March, so I think we're worried about that they could not spend the money in other months, but they spent, they're not hired, so they spent on 1 month, 1.2 billion. Roads and transport also, we are worried here because this department, part of the money during adjustment was used to, I think, to pay a Gautrain settlement. There was a legal settlement there, but still they underspend. So what is about the capacity of this department to deliver road infrastructure? With regards to economic classification, previously the province was understanding in the past 4 years, but now we've seen that in this 2016-17, there was that overspending over R1 billion. Like I've indicated, mainly in health and education. We're worried about the control measures because we know that the province was not doing well. So, but now the fact that there's been an overspending, we're worried in terms of what's happening. With regards to goods and services, there was an overall understanding of 219 million, but I've already indicated there was pressure on medicine in health and also the legal services, legal costs, even though I think that there is an issue of classification. Here it's just a medical legal claim, so it's not really just ordinary legal costs that we spent here. Also in the case of education, other supplies inventory, there was pressure on tablets in safety boards, we're spending 227.6. Transfers also overspent. Mainly there was an issue of the kids and doctor programs, and I know that other provinces have raised this issue. I think Limpopo has also raised it here in the committee. There's 261 students that are currently funded, and there was a decision that this program needs to be kind of either stopped because now it's costing government more. In terms of also when they return the students, money is put aside. So the last intake was in 2015, and the last group was expected to return in 2022. Honorable Chair has already commented on the issue of the revenue collection. It increased the overall over collection was at 408 million. The most departments that are worried about is this one, health. I've already indicated the overspending. Also, we're highlighting that this department has had 4 HODs in 4 years, 4.5 years. So we're really worried about stability within the department. The department added 2,576 employees in 2017, mainly to as nurses and doctors at 385, and then others also 385. So the medical negligence claims have already reported on that, but the actual payouts are increasing every year, so something got to be done here. And we have seen that the contingent liability too has increased from 13.5 billion at the end of 2015-16 to 16.8 billion at the end of 2016-17. So, and we don't even think that the commitment that has been made by the province to assist with the likely to be many victims has already been included here. And I think the most worrying part is the accruals at the end of March 2017. The 7 billion, and if you look at 7 billion, it's more than half of even 2017-18 budget or goods and services budget of the department, so it's a serious pressure. We've already spoken about medicine, it's going to be regular. Here we're worried to the extent that obviously if the department doesn't follow processes, they'll end up paying higher prices than it's supposed to. So they need to really look at that. Here we do have a slide on accruals and care of contract of mine. In education, there's been a reduction compared to 2015-16 by almost more than 300 million. But when you look at health, it's more than 2 billion increase from 4.8 to 7 billion. So this is really a serious pressure. I think for me, what I find strange about the accord for human settlement is that yes, they transferred the 1.2 billion in March, but if you look at, they do have accruals that are more than 30 days, so they could have paid some of these invoices instead of just staying with them. So they also, in their case, the accruals increased to 765.8 million. And also in of better departments that are going to increase on our work. Going to Mpumalanga.
All the members, you must make your notes as Treasury to the presentation. We will bring Treasury in at the end. When the provinces did their presentation, you ask your questions, they will do the wrap-up from the Treasury side. Please continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Mpumalanga
has inaugurated the underspend by 32.8 million. In education, there was an underspending of 123, but in their case, they also overspend on compensation of employees. So the main areas where there is underspending in this regard is goods and services and people. In the case of health, they understand also, I think in their case also, I think compensation of employees and medicine. So the money that they received for medicine, they could not, because they did receive money for general adjustments. So part of the money they could not absorb because they did get donor, the medicine that had been donated to them. Social development, they mainly underspend on capital projects, so there's a serious challenge with regards to infrastructure delivery there. Well, the legislature seems to look at them, they got 24 million, but it seems like they could not absorb all the funds they received. Culture, sports and recreation, also their case, the understanding there is mainly on CAPEX because of the slow progress on construction of libraries. So if you look at compensation, because education had a pressure, so there's the overspending there, and also there's the overspending on goods and services because some areas are under pressure. But if you look at the worry also here, it's capital infrastructure delivery there, there's that 560 million that has been underspent on capital. That understanding education contributed 123 million, but it's mainly capital because they had an issue of late appointment of contractors and poor performance on some projects. Also, there was an issue of slow spending regarding property payments and computer services. And there was some slight, I think, understanding school here. In the case of education, there was an increase in headcount, therefore I think it explains why there was an overspending. Health underspending mainly on COE was due to 70 million fiscal exceptions could not reflect the expenditure. So I suspect that if they have done general, probably this has been included. I've already spoken about medicine that underspending rate for the DK donation of ARVs from the National Department. However, we are worried about overspending on aid and support and laboratory services, which was partly due to media costs from the previous year. There is high administration fees, which is only seen in Mpumalanga here, due to the payment levy for the medical depot, but in other provinces, we don't see that excessive fees, administration fees. The provinces also have high litigation and liberty payments. I've already spoken about also they had the issue of slow progress on infrastructure projects. This is one of already touched on the social development one. Public works, they also have pressure on goods and services, but we see that it is a accelerated maintenance. So they had savings because they had natural attrition, people retiring and resigning. Also, they've got a pressure on recent taxes. So the agriculture one approaches, the culture one approaches, I don't know. Makuas also, they've increased. I think also just like Gauteng, I mean, if you look at the level of underspending and the level of
Kapa who are not really going together. So as the city of Mpumalanga would say, they are not perfect. Well, what is about the increase also in education? There's been an increase of Akua's pay by more than 200 million. Health also is under pressure, but I think what is comforting in Mpumalanga is when the bulk of the Akua's in their case of health is within 30 days, unlike in the case of Kaute, where it was more than 30 days, were more than the one that are within 1 month. Well, what is that also that your public workers and transport are beginning to have? Last year they did not report anything, but you see here there was 80 million. And also community safety, there was an increase on accruals in this regard. Going to the Western Cape, the province also underspent by 1% of their budget. In education, we see that the bulk of understanding actually is in administration programs and is on compensation of employees and other supplies and CAPEX. In health, there was also understanding of 114 million. In that case, mainly goods and transfers. I'll go into the details of those departments. Transport too is that transport and public works, the 115 million was money on contractors, so there is still there. So as you can see, the understanding was mainly on compensation and goods. And going into the details of it, that understanding in in education was mainly to non-teaming of posts and collaboration of transports from 2017 academic year. The numbers, the net increase was only 58 when you compare 2016 and 2017. But though we have noted that permanent educators number has declined by 96 and non-educators by 469. Goods and services underspent by 102 in education, with LTSM underspending by 53 million and school expenditure in 2.2. Also, they contribute to underspending. Where they've also overspent in. So they use the other funds to defray where they've overspent, like in such areas as norms and standards. So capital budgets also could not be fully utilized relating to the internal funding given during the adjustment budget for the ACD projects or from the school backlog grant. Some projects, schools such as Houston Primary School, had problems with architectural designs which delayed the project. Despite the underspending, there were pressures amounting to 165 relating to liberal duties as well as non-standard funding for the Children 1 schools, which was mainly on LKSM, which was brought forward, they brought it forward to 2016-17. I've already indicated that health, the main thing was the understanding was in goods and services. So it was in non-critical areas such as consultants, travel and other communication and catering. Lessons was also understand due to general that it still needed to be processed, so it means then probably, I don't know, the understanding might change when you look at the pre-audited numbers. Also, the issue of the intake of community health workers was lower to regarding in the budget trend not fully being spent. So we're saying that despite underspending for goods and services, medicine and medical supplies overspent. So we are saying here that the worst savings in with regards to medical legal claims and external bazaar that they were underspent by 10.3 million. Because when you look at Western Cape, the claims and compare what they paid out in 2015-16 and 2017, there was a decrease from 125 million to 55, which is a, it means that the province is really doing well in, you know, the medical legal claims. Human settlements, had a significant and expenditure on social and radical intervention after only spending 20% of the sub-program budget due to withholding of projects like project. So funds have to be moved to address projects under incremental interventions, and informal settlements upgrade was also significantly underspent by 231 million. I've indicated that transport of goods was underspent on goods from consultants and also from contractors with regards to maintenance relating to receiving unconditional grants. Only two grants where there was no spending is education infrastructure grants and national health insurance. But I suppose education infrastructure grants as a result of the increase, so because of that school that there were architectural problems, so therefore it's the reason for EIG. Also, the national health insurance, they spend only 92.2%. As Honorable Chesterton also indicated, that this province has over-collected, and they have been over-collecting for years, and we have always been of a view that they are being conservative when they do their forecasting. So with regards to infrastructure, they spend 98.8%. So in that case, they ended the financial year with a cash balance of 7.6 billion at the end of the year. With regards to accruals, I've noted that even in their case, there has been an increase in accruals when compared to 2015-16. The increase, I think, is mainly a little bit on education, a bit on health, but the biggest one is transport and public waste, where they have increased by more than 100 million. But I guess in their case, they do have 10, they might be able to answer with their pressures. I've already included the issue of understanding of all the three programs that we are seeing today on LCFM or the savings, because most of them, they're only dealing with pop-ups. I've already included the overspending of housing on and Western Cape on medicine. Mpumalanga, they did underspend for more than they got during adjustment, because they did get ARV donation from the National Department. And with regards to medical supplies, it was only Gauteng that underspent. Labor services were concerned, I think, about the underspending actually by Gauteng in this regard. So chances are the invoices will be part of the accruals that have been accumulated. Looking at the people's budget, we know that these three provinces that we see today, their personnel is managed well to the extent that they are spending less than, I think, below average. The average, I think, is 61%. And that. So they are below the national average, and being below average, this allows them to have money for capital, because part of it is, you find that capital is not, it's got a lower amount, but in the case of housing here, the reason they've got the lowest percentage share of payments for capital is because they put money aside for infrastructure, because as I've already indicated, there are issues with other departments in terms of infrastructure, so they put money aside because some projects are not ready for implementation. The next slide, looking at compensation of employees, we know that the compensation of employees for housing will not really be adequate when we look at that there's been salary increases of 7.3% for levels one up to 12 employees. Mpumalanga and Western Cape, they are adequately funded in that case. And we look at education compensation. Still, the same issue that one of housing that pressured the experience in 2016-17 might continue in 2017-18 because it's only growing by 5.5%, but that is still better than to look at the picture of health. I think to look at the picture of health, health compensation of what is in a worse position than any other province at 2.3%. So you can see that because of the 927, because the 927 they overspent with the border carry through effect, so it means they must find money somewhere within their budget. But now considering that housing health was a cost of 7 billion, so really they want to be under serious pressure. When you look at the provincial system from it, but honorable members will know that Gauteng did table a surplus budget. And you can see that the social service department's growth are not that much, but partly it's because of the infrastructure as a financial reserve will affect some of the departments and also will affect the non-social department because the bulk of the money here will go to those departments for infrastructure. So while the department supports projects that are ready, so I think there will be allocated money during the adjustment for the current year. Looking at the risk that we see that will affect the 2017 care board, spoken about the approval, I'll skip those other unauthorized and irregular things that Congress will address those. Claims against the state, also here, the worry is the actual payment because they also put too much pressure on the Department of Health. And also the fact that I've already said that the compensation of employees, that money they are overspent with for the care of three states because I don't think it was one off. So the other area where we feel that might have a temporary is the concessionaire patronage guarantees on housing contracts. But we must indicate that housing government has repaid their debt in full, so they don't owe a national government anymore with regard to the house rate pay.
They are smiling.
So medicine for relationships is an area where it's likely to experience pressure and the tablets and tablets for the part of e-learning. Property payment is also an area where it's really under pressure. So in terms of infrastructure for relationships that we're worried about just planning and spending on infrastructure projects. So for anything that the infrastructure budget were reduced so that at least maybe to assist them to facilitate their planning and be ready for project implementation. But we're saying with the surplus and the bank balance at the end of the March 2017, the province should be in a position to manage for this, even those departments like health that are under serious pressure. Going to Mpumalanga, we know that Mpumalanga is growing adequately and provincial on revenue expert conditional grant. But here, I think the issue is the component money that has not been entirely allocated over the entire health. A trend that is not similar to all provinces, but we see that their social departments are adequately funded, so they should be able to manage over the NCF. And we're saying at least they've been as far as possible protected from cuts, as I think also housing has done, and I think Western Cape. Here we're saying education, there's sufficient provision for compensation, so we shouldn't see the overspending that we saw in the 2016-17, and sufficient growth for HSM. We're worried about transfers because they might be under pressure. Health also, the budgets go well, but if you look at your medical supplies, laboratory services, inventory, they already the budgets are declining, so we are worried in this case that there might be a challenge here. So we're saying, if with regards to medicine, if the department was participating in the transversal contrast, they could realize efficiencies in this regard. Infrastructure has been challenges in all the affected departments, and now as a result, because provincial departments will get incentives when you plan better and when you spend and the value for money, you get incentives. So, but in the case of Mpumalanga, they've been losing that because of the spending in their case. We know that in terms of cost cutting, there's a moratorium in place, and the functions of appointed being centralized at the provincial treasury. And we know even that there's been a reduction in the MCP and MEGA as part of the rationalization process. However, we're worried about the accrual, which 428 of it is more than 30 days. The province also has done well with regards to the own revenue. They've over collected because they've taken over services from this municipality which are not running the and the license of aid being goes to by the gambling is anticipated of main revenue by approximately 20 million. And also the Department of Health has been really trying to do well in terms of the patient fees revenue. They're in the process of installing the deployment that interchange in various facilities to speed up the submission of claims for medical aid and road accident funds. With regards to Western Cape, the transfers from National are growing adequately, but if you look at the provincial on revenue, is declining because in the current, in the previous financial year, they over-collected. But now if you look at the amount, amount they collected, is even more than what they budgeted in 2019-20. So therefore, I hope that in maybe in the 2018-19 year, the province will revise their projections. And they have not budgeted for any surplus in that case. We're saying that look at the Western Cape provincial infrastructure is one of the fastest growing in real terms among all provinces at 1.9% compared to national average of 1.9%, which continues over the NTF. So the province has made progress for 2.8 billion over the NTF to reduce unforeseen and avoidable expenditures, such as the flows of pressure in health and education. And obviously the recent natural disasters, drought, fire, and storm damages are a potential risk to the provincial fiscal framework. The social sectors are growing adequately. I've already spoken about their own revenue, that the decline is not realistic. So that hence we said the province has been conservative all these years that they've been over-collecting. So we have seen that COE is also well because the province also has that limit, expenditure limit, and there is that cost containment strategy on COE. But we see that some non-core items are still growing excessively, but what you have noticed is that in the 2016-17, they underspend on this item, so the expectation is that there might be an aspect issue on this item. Education, we've seen that also COE is growing adequately, and but they're budgeted to have educated numbers of 31,621 from the current financial year. And also key areas like healthcare centers, school infrastructure, training, and school nutrition are also increasing sufficiently. But we awarded award property payments which caters for municipal services and maintenance and repairs which is declining. Transfer to school is below inflation increase. But we know that some transfers were brought forward to 2016-17, therefore this might not be a huge concern. Health budget was saying is the fastest growing in the social sector. Probably maybe within the health family might be one of them, not really the one, but might be among the first three that are growing well. I was saying health in Western Cape receives the biggest share of provincial equitable share compared to its counterparts in other provinces. But also, I mean, Gauteng is the second one, the Gauteng health is the second, that gets the second biggest share in the equitable share. So we don't anticipate any compensation of employees around the this department. And non-negotiable items have been budget adequacy, such as lessons, medicine, and data supplies. Also, in this case, we're worried about property payments that are not catered for adequacy. Capital spending is projected to decline in the current financial year, but pick up over the MTF. There was some overspending in this regard here on medical equipment in 2016-17. We also see that allocation for nursing college nursing training college also declined 18.7%. Human settlement, there was adequate growth, though the social and rental interventions was reduced significantly by 280 because the reduction was due to movement of funds to SRA for implementing social housing projects. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Karekwa. Thank you for a thorough presentation. To Honourable MEC Kwane and MEC Krishis, we appreciate your presence here today. You are the political heads of your department. Sitting in Budget Council and Honourable members, the effect of fiscal consolidation will be felt seriously in provinces, especially in health and in education. We will again receive at the MTBBS tabling a revised fiscal framework, as we speak here, that is going to be the reality. And we have to adapt to low growth in terms of our budgets. And I repeat, the pressure will be on health, it will be on education. How are we going to deal with this if you look at accruals, fruitless, weightless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure? So that puts another pressure on the budget. Mindful of what the Minister of Finance said about the expenditure ceiling for the next few years, we must prepare ourselves, it's going on maybe for a third and a fourth year. We must put our mindset in that way. That's why these engagements are very important, because this report also goes to the Minister of Finance. That we pick up the challenges early enough, in the early stage, and see where we can assist as Parliament. Because in terms of the Constitution, we have a mandate. How can we assist provinces and our provinces and national government assist our municipalities in terms of Section 154 of the Constitution? Western Cape, we're going to take you first. You've seen the figures. You've listened to Treasury, listened to the risks. Talk to us about your economic growth. There's a very good picture there. The same with Gauteng, it was a good story. And how you address your fiscal position, looking at the Treasury presentation, but for all the members in the research document. You must look at the table that Esther prepared, referring to audit reports. That's a very important page. On the departments, but also on the entities. And that will be captured in our committee report as well. It's an important part of the provincial picture we are dealing with. Question, Kate, I'll give you 30 minutes. Welcome. Are you looking for someone?
Jefferson, good morning. I just want to check with the secretary that would be slideshow that
you can. You know what to do. Cash balance 7.6 billion on revenue, 3 billion. So you have some fiscal space.
Good morning, Jefferson. Good morning to the members of the committee, to the MEPs in the room, and also to my colleagues. Jefferson, we're quite pleased to be able to present our policy position here this morning. Just in terms of the structure of the presentation, I'd like to set out how we intend to respond to the invitation of the committee here this morning. I will be assisted by my colleagues to deal with the key aspects of the presentation. Ms. Corson will deal with our fiscal response. Ms. Santana from a public finance overview, and then Ms. Darling will deal with some of the ancillary issues on the.
Yeah, you took over medical place.
Excuse me?
You
come from
national training.
Yeah. I hope that's okay with you, Chair. And Mr. Harding will assist me with some of the ancillary issues. Chair, just in terms of that, I would like to take the opportunity to emphasize the apology from our MEC, Dr. Mayer. He wanted to be here today, but I'm sure you're aware of the state of the artists in the Western Cape. I'd like to perhaps quickly connect with your opening comments. I mean, you mentioned about governance. I think it's key for us to talk about our fiscal policy stance as a provincial government. The first issue I want to highlight, I mean, the first principle that we've approached our budget with is that any budget that we have must be balanced. The second issue relates to fiscal consolidation, and I think you've also touched on the issue of the expenditure ceiling, so we will show you how we've dealt with certain expenditure, particularly around in the area of goods and services. And then secondly, we'll explain our approach that we've undertaken to deal with limiting growth in our personnel costs. Then the third principle is around the issue around continuous fiscal discipline, and then particularly what we've done to avoid any unauthorized expenditure and then to limit any irregular, frivolous, and wasteful expenditure. And then the fourth principle, Chairperson, is how we've dealt with allocated efficiency in terms of making sure that our budget is representative of the priorities of the provincial government. I'm going to hand over now to Marcia to deal with the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson, members, MSCs, and everyone else in the room. I'm just going to talk a little bit about our fiscal approach and elaborate on some of the principles that my HSD has spoken about. Can you maybe move to the next slide, please? Thank you. This slide is just depicting the Western Cape economy in a summarized version, looking at some of the key macroeconomic indicators that we do consider and that we track on a regular basis to inform our plans and budgeting approach within the Western Cape. So we do know that we are in a low growth environment. The latest statistics for the Western Cape official statistics show 1.5% in 2015, but we know that we're also currently in a technical recession, and what happens in the global and national economy has an impact on the Western Cape. Our labor force also still sitting with relatively high levels of unemployment, although the recent quarter four statistics from SAS-SA shows that on rural unemployment that rate was quite low and the lowest that it's been. Our human development index also tending to show some positive improvements, and this is particularly also linked to the provision and access to health and education services within the province. Despite all of these things, we know that poverty and inequality is still high, and those are considerations in the provincial strategy. We also know who our major export partners are, particularly because of the Western Cape approach to try and improve our relations, to try and bring in revenue to the country through export promotion, and that is part of the specific economic strategy, particularly undertaken by the Department of Economic Development and Tourism. So this is just showing, this is some of the context that we do take into account when we put together the budget and when we have engagements within the provincial government on the plans and budget going forward.
Also to the other provinces and you as well, the effect of migration, because that's another factor to bring into mind when you do budgets, especially Western Cape, especially Mpumalanga, bordering on Mozambique and Swaziland, and Gauteng is the economic heartthrob of Africa, not only South Africa. Yes, dear. Carry on.
Okay, can we move to the next slide? So in terms of the current economic outlook and the implications that we note, I mentioned what some of the key economic challenges are. Despite this, within the Western Cape, we are committed to looking at the positive side of things and also what are the economic opportunities for the region. So with regards to that, the economic opportunities lie in our key growth sectors. The services sector, of course, dominates the Western Cape economy, but we've also seen over recent years that the construction sector has shown quite a boom. There's also been an increase in property prices that supports it, and obviously also linked to infrastructure. And then with regards to priority sectors within the Western Cape, there is a particular strategy to focus on three main sectors as a start, and that is agri-processing, tourism, oil and gas. And that's given the particular competitive advantages within the province, and also that the strategy is not only to support economic growth, but also to create jobs, or to support the creation of jobs within the private sector. So those are the three sectors, and there are particular strategies that are of a need these to support these sectors from a Western Cape government perspective. The other thing is to note the levels of business confidence. So the Western Cape Economic Cluster is also in regular engagement in terms of how do we capitalize on business confidence in the province, and then also looking at our trade opportunities. Now, one of the things that we've also factored into the recent discussions has been the possible implications of the recent credit rating downgrade. Fortunately, it seems that the economy did not take the dip that everyone expected when we downgraded, but we are constantly looking into what are the potential implications and how it may particularly impact on the fiscus, working with our Department of Economic Development and Tourism. It was also mentioned by the National Treasury presentation what we did with our MTBPS, our tabling of our medium-term budget policy statement last year, which covers the policy environment for the next 3 years. Similar to the National Treasury, we also published a fiscal risk statement, and one of the things that came out is, of course, the drought and the water crisis that we identified as a risk, and unfortunately that risk has materialized in a big way within the Western Cape over the last few weeks in terms of the damages of the recent floods and as well as the fires in the South Cape. we also recognize that we take an holistic approach to economic development, recognizing that labor and capital also positively contribute to economic growth. And so we also, when we look at our economic development strategy, we consider the entire Western Cape government role and the entire budget, so looking at the budgets of health and education as well, given that they are the they take the lion's share of the budgeting, and then of course looking at infrastructure. What we're also looking at is innovative and entrepreneurial approaches to economic development, with government being active in creating and shaping markets, looking at developing new skill sets in response to the current economic outlook, using technology as an enabler, and then a big priority on focusing on investing and targeting infrastructure spending. So that is all part of the approach. The overall fiscal and budget policy response is designed to manage risk and maintain fiscal sustainability, particularly given the current constraints that we are facing. And the focus of the 2017 budget that we've put on the table is to deal effect with the provincial strategic plan, that is the overall provincial strategy, inclusive of some game changes that were identified to target particularly intractable problems. So there are five provincial strategic goals, and the first one is Provincial Strategic Goal 1, which is about creating opportunities for growth and jobs, and a main element of this is giving effect to Project Aliso, which is this approach to try and support those three sectors I mentioned at the start, to stimulate growth and development and the creation of jobs in those sectors. Our budget is currently sitting at about 59 billion, of which 8.6 billion is particularly targeted for infrastructure-led growth and job creation. So that is where we feel government has a lever to stimulate the economy through the infrastructure, and that's why we have a particular focus on that. So our theme for our budget was a budget for growth, which includes inclusive growth, sustainable growth, and smart growth. So we're looking at the different elements of growth, and some of the priorities that follow on your see is in support of that. So the five provincial strategic goals, I mentioned strategic goal one is creating opportunities for growth and jobs. Strategic goal two is with regards to improving education outcomes and being focused on opportunities for youth development, given that the majority of our unemployed are youth, and also looking at the demographic profile of the province. And then strategic goal three is with regards to increasing wellness, safety, and tackling social ills. Strategic goal four is enabling a resilient, sustainable, quality, and inclusive living environment. And then all of these are underpinned by our strategic goal five, where the Treasury plays quite a critical role in, together with our other governance departments, and that is about how we go about embedding good governance and integrating service delivery. So that is also how we link up with the municipalities in the Western Cape through partnership and spatial alignment. So these goals basically have different groups, and they're transversal groups, so it's different departments within the Western Cape that collectively drive delivery on these particular goals. It's not one department, it's a collective of departments that play a role there. So the approach I mentioned is holistic, looking at both the elements of social and economic development and the linkages between the two, and also focusing on attracting investment, infrastructure and led growth. We also commenced within the last 2 years a more integrated and coordinated approach to planning and budgeting. So it's not only the Treasury that drives these processes. We do it as a collective with different partners within the Western Cape government, the Department of the Premier, the Department of Local Government, to make sure that there is alignment between our plans and that of our local government, as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning, because we recognize that social targeting and social development is also a critical element of growing the economy and giving effect to our government's objectives. And then we also have the Economic Development Partnership, an external government partner on board with us, And that's particularly to assist us in facilitating partnerships in areas that that require them. We also continue with strengthening our evidence-based planning. Evidence-based planning is one of our pillars, and we do this through the provincial treasury in collaboration with some of the other significant government departments on an annual basis, conducting and publishing socioeconomic intelligence, economic research. And we mainstream this also into the approach with our engagement with our departments as a source of evidence. And then furthermore, consideration of economic development at the regional level is something that we're also undertaking in partnership with the municipalities to discuss what are some of the issues that we can collaborate on. And I mentioned already spatial and targeting planning and investment is key. So this just gives a little bit of detail, Chair, in terms of the economic growth strategy, in terms of provincial strategic goal one. So what are some of the initiatives that are being undertaken? I mentioned support to key support sectors. There's also the focus on improving and increasing the level of artisan and technical skills, so skills development, game changer, ease of doing business, given that government needs to provide an enabling environment. So it is also looking at where government can eliminate red tape to facilitate investment and growth, and then also a focus on transport and energy. So some of the projects are currently underway that the Western Cape government support is the Saldanha Bay IDC, a big focus on infrastructure. There's also an energy security game changer that's trying to deal with energy security to support economic growth, and I mentioned the skills one. So this is just some of the initiatives, and if more details required, then we can provide it to the committee.
We got a full presentation on 29th of January, just before we left for Sundown. It was Oversight Week. Western Cape briefed us, City of Cape Town briefed us, and then we went to Sundown, and so we got that.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. NEC, and colleagues. I'm going to deal with the second part of the presentation. The preliminary provincial overseas as of 31st of March 2017. Maybe just to indicate, as the chair has already indicated, there's a 6% growth year on year in terms of the owned revenue. Next slide, okay, so when we look at the outcome as of 31st of March, then we collected just over 3 billion rand in owned revenue. And one of our key, couple of our key revenue drivers would obviously be motor vehicle licenses. And what we see here, that there's a 7.3% increase in terms of our collection rate if we compare it year on year. So our total collection for motor vehicle licenses was 1.4 billion. Okay, then for health, what we've had is owned revenue of 543. There was a slight decrease there, but that is related to with the province receives donor funding from the Global Fund. That's to deal with our HIV and AIDS program, and it recognizes revenue for the Department of Health, and that donor funding has declined over year on year. So the provincial treasury then, the entity attached to the provincial treasury is the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board, and that's the revenue that we are collecting there. So in total it's 579 million rand. We do experience, I think Marsha also indicated in her opening remarks, in her slide, some of the challenges that we see. So I'm not going to go into detail, but this just also explains perhaps the reason why Ms. Karekwe indicated the conservative nature of our revenue budget. This would indicate also some of the reasons why we are pursuing a more conservative route in terms of own revenue budgeting. Chair, members, this is an overview of the preliminary provincial expenditure as of the 31st of March 2017. The numbers have changed in terms of prelim and then pre-audited, but at the time what we are presenting here is the preliminary outcome, and that presents outcome of expenditure as 99% of our budget was then spent. And it also provides just a breakdown in terms of the departments. I'm just going to provide the committee with some of the narrative in terms of the reasons for some of the things that one observed in the previous slide, and also address some of the issues that Ms. Karekwe highlighted in her observations in terms of the provincial expenditure. So one of the things that Ms. Karekwe in her presentation, National Fishery, highlighted is obviously the issues around compensation of employees. So from a public finance perspective, as from a provincial government perspective, we given the directive received from the National Treasury, in terms of the reductions or the effort that provinces or the entire government needs to make in terms of reducing compensation expenditure, what we have done is then in the 2016-17 main budget process, we have earmarked the allocations specifically in terms of COE. So it was earmarked and appropriately, it was appropriated specifically and exclusively in the Western Cape Appropriation Act. And then what we have done is we then, as provincial treasury, implemented the determination of upper limits on compensation of employee budgets. And these allocations were then further earmarked in an attempt to manage and contain personnel discounts and expenditure within the 16-17 financial year. And with that, sorry, Chair, we're jumping a bit. So that is part of the, that is in fact the reason why we see the particular trend that we see in compensation and the fact that we were successful in reducing the number as well as our outstanding spend on compensation. Next slide. So what we spend 99% of the budget, and the underspending, the preliminary underspending, is 549 million. So the underspending includes in a lion's share of that is indeed on compensation, as well as which then accounts for less than, although there's underspending of less than 1% of the COE adjusted budget. What we have seen is that with violence and forcing of turnover, et cetera, that we do, we've seen a slight increase also in terms of the underspending. Sorry, decrease in terms of the underspending. The next slide deals with the detail in terms of the underspending per department. And I think Ms. Karekwe indicated, I'm not going to, with your permission, Chair, not necessarily go through the detail, because we concur with the reasons and explanations that the National Commission has already provided. The preliminary public entity expenditure, at the end of the financial year, the audit, the outcome, the actual outcome was 96.6% spent. And then I'm just going to jump to the next slide. So at the end of March, there was a net under-expenditure in terms of the expenditure for public entities of 19 million. And that is mainly in terms of CASITA. That was on goods and services. And what the same principles in terms of efficiency, I just need to indicate the same principles that we applied with the budget for departments. We have extended that also to public entities. So where we have issued instructions in terms of measures that departments need to comply with, the same would apply in this case. So one will see that the underspending then would be in relation to goods and services for CASITA. For the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board, there's an underspending of 5 million, which is also related to goods and services, primarily for professional advisory services. What has happened is that in the past, that service used to be outsourced, but during the year, a lot of the work could be completed in-house. So what we see is in that type of saving. The Department of Cape Nature, that is on capital projects, and I think I'll elaborate when we get to the infrastructure spending, because we do make mention there of the spending on Cape Nature. And then the Western Cape Liquor Authority, that's a $3 million, also on goods and services as well as for payment for capital assets as it relates to the liquor licensing system. If we look at the preliminary outcome just for infrastructure, and we need to link it also with our strategy in terms of infrastructure-led growth, what we see in the preliminary outcome is a 98.3% spend. What I can also share with the committee, the pre-audited outcome shows 100% spend because of the on infrastructure. So we have dealt with it, but for purposes of today's discussion, we are focusing on the preliminary outcome. And at the time, education had a 99.4% spend, health was at 101% spend, human settlement 100%, Cape Nature, I've indicated their 83.8% spend, public works at the time was 99.6% spend. And then we've also separated, as per the request, the social infrastructure from the economic infrastructure. And what we have put with economic infrastructure specifically is our spending on roads, as well as we included then our spending on the broadband infrastructure. And there's a breakdown in terms of the votes, and one can see the type of expenditure there in terms of that. Lastly, Chair, we are presenting our balances in the revenue fund. It was 7.6 billion. We have commitments to the tune of 7.69 billion, which will then leave us with a slight funding deficit of 56 million. But we do believe that we can make it up, so we're not too concerned about that because our own revenue numbers would take care of that. But we have listed just our commitment for broadband. Our ICS, the National Treasury, did make available to us in the fiscal framework allocation in the outer year of the MTF, which at the time, given what we have put in place for in terms of containing our COE spending, we did not allocate. So that funding is also in there, and that is what one can see on that slide. The funding was made available for the last year of the MTF, so should the negotiations show us and should something happen that we would require this funding, we will then obviously utilize it. And then we also have in the asset financing reserve, we've made available funding for our road infrastructure projects as well as for other infrastructure projects in the main for accommodation needs. And then we have also in there 1 week of the equitable share funding that we keep just in case something should happen and we should be in a bit of a spot, then we would have 600 million to keep us going for a particular week, should there be any. But this is just in terms of our risk, building up some cushion in terms of our risk.
Got 6 minutes left.
Taking you through the slides for debt accruals, unauthorized and irregular purchase and rest of expenditure. As you can see, that the province has slightly increased its debt owed to departments. It's sitting at an increase of 160 million. There's 5 departments that have managed to reduce the debt. In the 8 departments, the debt has been increased. 6 of those departments have increased of debt with less than 250,000. The lion's share of the debt increase relates to motor vehicle license, which pertains to transport and public works. But transport and public works has implemented a process already to improve on the debt management, and that is going through the specific account. In terms of the other increase in the increase in debt was agricultural services, which has increased by 1.2 million. But again, it's under control of the department because in our forums we deal with the management of debt as part of also cost containment and seeing where we can improve processes. In terms of the accruals, that's like this. Year on year, the accruals have increased marginally. It is sitting at about 800 million, but the lion's share of that pertains to really 3 departments, which education as expected, health as expected, and the Department of Transport and Public Works. We are managing the approvals, and specifically we are managing the certificate payments on a monthly basis with the department, with a report back to the provincial treasury and the national treasury.
See, members, this affects the fiscal space. This last few pages in each presentation.
Moving on to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the province has significantly been able to reduce the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The net amount sitting for fruitless and wasteful expenditure of a budget of 55 billion is 105,000. And there's explanations, we have detailed explanations for all the fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by every department. If we look at the regular expenditure for the province is 78 million. And again, where there's been incurred fruitless and irregular expenditure, the condoning authority lies between the National Treasury, the Provincial Treasury, or the Accounting Officer, and we have a robust process to make applications to National Treasury, where National Treasury is the condoning authority. We have been able to reduce irregular expenditure year on year. Check this in the would have liked to demonstrate, and I'm sure we have shown that today, that our budget is underpinned by evidence-based practices and a sound fiscal policy principle. What we also hope we have demonstrated that in terms of our economic strategy, that the EG1 is in place and functioning. Jefferson, the next point is that we would have liked to have demonstrated that there's strong oversight and fiscal discipline to ensure that the governance is in place. And in terms of our budget approach, that there is a clear intergovernmental strategy in place to ensure that there's integrated management and partnering, particularly with our local government colleagues. And in Jefferson, in the last few slides, as you've indicated, I mean, we'd like to have demonstrated that we have minimized the and wasteful expenditure and demonstrating our adherence to rule of law and constitutionalism. Chair, thank you.
It's okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. We wish you a successful rainy season. I mean the Makwa. We are also praying for rain on the west coast. Umalanda, where the sun rises. If you see you and your team, introduce yourselves and then you can take us through. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
We came a long way to get together.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm Kombozo Eric Kolat, MEC for Finance, Economic Development and Tourism in the beautiful province of Mpumalanga, as we have already said. But, Chair, I don't want to waste much of your time. I can see that we are behind time. Our presentation.
Giving you 35 minutes, I gave you to Western Cape.
Okay.
Because we started right, because members were not in time, so we will leave here 20 minutes past.
Okay. Yes. No, that will be great. Our presentation will be shared between the HOD and Stefan Piren, who's behind us, who's going to give us the first part of the economic outlook of the province and how are we trying to deal with the challenges which we are facing as a province. And then later the HOD will come into the details in terms of the numbers and all the issues which you have requested us to highlight. But I must say that indeed, Chair, on the matter which we have raised, I think it's a matter which we need to continuously look at. Because I think some of the challenges which we are facing as a province emanate from our constitution, where you talk about the issue of health, which is not limited to the citizen of the country. Any person must be treated and so on. And how do you deal with the influx of the people from Mozambique and Swaziland, which literally, if they were coming in with buses, you can see that hundreds of buses coming in the province for the free education and other health services which they are unable to get in the neighboring countries and so on. But without a waste of time, let me hand over to Mr. Van Buren to just give us the first part of the presentation. I'll come later. Thank you, Chair.
Please proceed.
Thanks, Chair, committee members, MECs, colleagues. Let me
focus on some relevant slides regarding the economy of Mpumalanga. Let's get this technology right here. If we look at the first slide there about the economic targets, I think it's important, Chair, to take note where are we at the moment in terms of economic growth and also the triple challenges, and where do we want to be in 2030 in line with the NDP. I'm not going to go in detail here, but we know about growth of more than 5% and also unemployment of 6%, our poverty rate in terms of the lower bound poverty line, 5%. And also the Gini coefficient of 0.6. You will see where we are at the moment and where we want to be in 2020. We are very far from that at the moment. I think our biggest challenge is the low economic growth rate, like basically all the provinces. And also in Mpumalanga's case, the high unemployment rate at the moment of 31.5%, according to the strict definition. If you look at the next slide in terms of Mpumalanga's economic performance, I've tried here to give some indication what is happening in terms of high-level economic indicators, also giving a specific trend. You will see in red if we are not performing well, and green improving, and also measure that against the target of 2030 and using 2011 as baseline. Now, it's very clear if you look at the GDP growth rate, we'll see we are not performing very well. I think if you look at 2014, we had the second highest growth rate of the provinces, believe it or not, of 2.7%. Then we went down to a negative growth rate. And then last year, just more than 0%. This year, Chair, we are predicting a growth rate of more or less 1%. It can even be higher, depending on what is happening with mining, because mining is 25% of Mpumalanga economy. So normally there's a very strong correlation between the performance of mining and Mpumalanga's economy. And at the moment, mining is doing relatively well if we look at the latest data from Stats South Africa. Now, GDP per capita, staying more or less the same. I think you've mentioned, you know, people coming in terms of migration. I think the problem we have, and like many provinces, is that the population growth rate at the moment is higher than the economic growth rate. Now, if you have economics as a subject, and I was a lecturer telling students, the first thing is, if that is the case, you are going down. So, and I think for many provinces, that's the case. So we must make sure that economic growth is higher than the population growth rate, which is not the case. I think the next one is the interesting indicator of public infrastructure investment as a percentage of the provincial GDP. I don't think we have enough emphasis on that, Chair, in the different provinces, but I think it's very important that we come to the NDP target of 10% in this regard. Now, at the moment, if we measure that, it's more or less at 2.6%. I hope the provinces are using this, because what we are saying simplistically is that we have to increase the public infrastructure investment four times if we want to come up to the 10%, but we are talking about 2030. And that's also part of our economic strategy, and where infrastructure is used as a vehicle in this regard. Tourism, there's some indication of the size of tourism there from the expenditure point of view. The net job creation, creating more, almost 60,000 jobs the last year, which is not bad for Mpumalanga, because our target is more than 70,000 jobs, Chair, but the problem is we are not creating jobs fast enough in terms of the job seekers. So we are creating jobs, but there's more people coming into the labor market from a trick and not with good qualifications, etc.
Mozambique is surviving on a well-paid IMF loan.
For sure.
In reality, it was in the papers a month ago.
Yeah. We take note of that, Chair. Thanks for that perspective. Unemployment, you will see going up. I already mentioned that. You will see also some numbers there according to the strict definition. More than 500,000 people, if you take the expanded definition, is almost 900,000 people unemployed. And you will see also the youth unemployment rate there. If we look at specifically more about the labor situation, because that's very relevant for any strategy there, you will see the youth. I'm not going into detail there, but yes, if we look at the unemployed number, more than 70% of them are young people, so all our strategies and plans are basically trying to address that. If you look at the next slide, how do we respond to this? We have economic growth path, and we also have a Vision 2030. I think we are one of the few provinces who's having a growth path, and we have a provincialized NDP. But it's not only about that, it's implementing that, but just to point out a couple of priorities there in terms of integrated economic planning and development, not going into detail there, but economic intelligence. I think the Western Cape also referred to that evidence-based. We have a lot of emphasis on that. I think we're one of the few provinces, maybe the only province, who's involved in some economic impact assessment, some economic modeling, where we are saying what is the impact of provincial government expenditure in terms of GDP multipliers, etc. But I don't want to brag about that. I just want to raise it.
There's nothing wrong to brag about.
I'm just saying that humble but confident. Trade and investment promotion. There's also good things from Mpumalanga. And also the partnerships with the private sector. I think we are, as a province, very serious about this. We can't operate in silos, so it's important to have partnerships with our relevant stakeholders, including the private sector, and have some relevant forums, even on local level with LED forums. And then also the establishment of a provincial economic discussion forum soon. Now, lastly, some key initiatives, interventions at the moment, expanding the provincial industrial base, and we also having a Mpumalanga industrial development plan in this regard, and eventually we will have a agriculture and forestry technology park. We will also have a petrochemical technology park and a mining and metals technology park in different areas in the province, to also have some labor-intensive projects and create jobs also for the young people. You'll also see investment there, and also MEGA, which is next week having an investment conference all over NEC. I don't know if we can invite some of the people here, but the fact of the matter is we want to showcase the opportunities also in Mpumalanga across various sectors, and they also our seriousness about the green economy and SMEs and cooperatives. And lastly, we also have a PERU document, the provincial, can I just show it maybe also for record purposes, which we will leave here to the committee if you want more detail about the provincial economic review and how to.
Yes, looking forward to that.
Thank you, Chair. I'm handing over to the HO.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable MCs and colleagues. On the next slide, slide number 9, our Honourable Chairperson made reference to the work of the Budget Council and the commitment that the members of Budget Council, which are the 9 Honourable MCs for Finance, made together with the Minister. So we made reference to that, that we continue with the containment of administrative personnel in the two sectors, education and health. Ms. Kharazba, when she presented from National Health Service, we see that there's a growth in numbers in education in particular in 2016-17 as opposed to 2015-17. May we add over and above the reasons that she gave, that there was an issue with the reforms on the chair on pension, that brought about an exodus of teachers at the time. But we saw them coming back in 2016-17 when the explanations were made. Also issues around the next commitment in that joint action plan was issues around improving level collection. We indicate at the specific slide the rationalization and closure of redundant and underperforming programs and entities. Will indicate later around our Mpumalanga Gambling Board and Mpumalanga Liquor Authority that are being met in order to bring in some efficient partnership, the intensification of cost containment measures. On slide number 10, we are making a commitment that we are indicating that our the relevant committees in our provincial legislature in Mpumalanga, they have looked at this report as we continue to make this presentation for the oversight at that level. So the Committee of Oil Chairperson has received this report. When our colleagues from National Trust presented, the under expenditure of the province was indicated at $3 million. We concur with that figure at the level of preliminary, but these figures that we present are from the pre-audited annual financial statement, a slight reduction that Ms. Karekwe did allude to, that there might be generals here and there. So that small difference between 262 and the 292 is what we're referring. That's on the audited financial statement. On slide number 11, she has already indicated those ones that are shaded in yellow, indicated that those were understanding and different from state to state. Then if we skip with the guidance of the Honourable Chair, we may go to the slide number 18, a slide next to us. The Honourable Chair said that when you present, you must go there. And already with the actuals, we are in agreement with the figure that our colleague from National Trust, the 1.414, and the fact that she indicated that the bulk of these accruals are less than 30 days, 986 million. In her presentation, she also confirmed the figure that we are in agreement above 30 days, which is 428 million. There's still room for improvement for those that are in excess of 30 days. But as a province, we have established a call center where even issues around slow payment, non-payment are reported, and we then take that matter up with the various departments. So we are asking the accruals, acknowledging that it has a negative effect. If we close the year with 292 million and the accruals are 1.4 billion in those main sectors, education and health, that is a risk. We confirm what she's saying to the fiscal environment in our province. On slide number 19, its own revenue, she already confirmed that we have over-collected in the 2016-17 financial year. The figure is 289 million from the main sources that are indicated, the gambling investment taxes, our motor vehicle tax, patient fees, and also those four items. We have made a commitment as a province that we project to increase this collection by 200 million during 2017-18 financial year and a further 200 million in 2018-19 financial year. Over the MTF, the province's intention is to reach 4.2 billion and we are very close to that. There are challenges though in the collection of own revenue that we indicate here. The failure by municipality to pay over collected revenue on an agency basis. Our colleagues from National Trust Research, they acknowledge that the province has already taken over 6 municipalities that were defaulting. In the speech that OMFNC made recently was that Victor Kanye is being added to the 6 because they volunteered and said, take over, please help us with the collection of structure. We're also targeting any municipality that may default on this to increase the revenue and collect as we are still struggling though with the inability and lack of capacity to claim from other institutions, that in the institutions of the Department of Health in particular. These issues are receiving attention on a regulatory manner. The manual revenue systems in hospitals and some backlog of claims that are dealing with. these are named from the Road Accident Fund and some medical aid. We are also requested to bring in what are the bank balances. On slide number 21, we list all the bank balances that we have. We start with the legislature on the first month. We indicate the balance that was there at the end of March. What is in the intergovernmental cash coordination at the reserve bank for our province, we indicate that on the second column B. The balance is in the various departments on the right-hand side, an investment that we've made for a period of 2 years in order to boost our revenue over the during this difficult period. It's a two-year investment. We have negotiated with our banks, we have made them distress and commit to that, and we have selected the one that we think will give us the best return on our investment in 2019. We are further requested to bring some report on the debtors who owns the province of Mpumalanga. We brought some trends from 2013 to 2018. What we are indicating to the honorable member is that in we look at the total, we had 127 million in 2012, 121, 104, 91, and 85. We are indicating that this is decreasing over the review period. However, we could speed that up and make those debtors and collect from them so that the province can continue to have an improved fiscal space. So as a provincial federal, we continue to support this department on debt management using our forums, one-on-ones. But what we also see, what we also look at is what is the root cause so that we can strengthen the control environment. If the first one is on trade receivables, it means there are service providers that were not paid correctly or double paid. So we don't only look at the reduction of the money coming to the provincial bank account, the revenue fund, but we are saying what are those deficiencies in the system of internal controls in order to improve our control environment. The next three slides we are not proud of is those unwanted expenditures. Starting Western Cape must not laugh. They always break and say we actually do not have anything called an unauthorized expenditure. He's shaking, my colleague is shaking his hand. When I heard that Western Cape is coming in, I said, I don't want to present an unauthorized in the presence of that agency. We, honourable members, we are dealing with the matters that are historic, that are on the opening balance sheet. In education and in health in particular, it matters that we are relating to the old and to the earlier years of implementing the OSD then. So what we have done and what we continue to do is to present the case again to the SCOPA committee to indicate that some of the issues were bigger than our control, the outcome of control, if I may, it must come allowed to say that on the OSD and the overspending that relates to those two sector departments. But maybe where we have failed as departments is to go to SCOPA and education and say, and provide the documentation, because SCOPA will never disregard an unfunded mandate that has landed us into trouble of unauthorized. But the area of improvement in the department is to present ourselves with proper documentation, proper portfolio of evidence. And this COPA committee will never be unreasonable in as far as matters that were beyond our control. If we need to bring in documentation from our colleagues from National in support of those years and the budget, then we should be able to clear the 800 million, which is emanating from education and health. But we can confirm that in the end-text discussions that are chaired by our honored MC has tabled these unwanted expenditures to each and every executive authority of the department and said, for unauthorized, I will take you to SCOPA, I will accompany you to clear those two that relate to OSD. The rest, the 22, 12, and 7, are minor issues that are in departments that have nothing to do with the occupation certificate compensation. OSD is only education and health. On irregular expenditure, as indicated earlier also by my colleagues from Western Cape, the authority to deal with some of the issues is our national treasury. We have come below the table, we are indicating that most of the expenditure has been already escalated, like the public works of 91 million, the health of 5.1 billion is also before our committee, human settlement 582, and education. For us is to ensure that the support department in concluding the investigation, because it's the first critical point, where is the investigation report, who has been found wanting, are there consequences in relation to this matter? And so is the process or fruitless, but this is concluded provincially. On slide 26, we are making a recommendation to the honorable members of this committee to kindly note our report and provide guidance to us as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Tumulanga. We need guidance. The moral of the story is be handsome. That's why it's so important that MSCs also come with the HODs presenting. And it's for us to strengthen the ties between the NCLP and the province. This is one of the methods we use to do it. You see, Mr. Finance came in the beginning of the year. He said we're tabling the budget. Then he indicates what is the debt of government. Debt service cost, and gives that picture, that page. That's why we engage with the provinces to see this page in the province. So you've got the page of 22nd of February added to that plus the page of the province equals how does South Africa look like. That's why we do this exercise. That we have our hands on the steering wheel. We must be in charge. Thank you, Gauteng. Welcome to MEC. You can take us through.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We just want to update the presentation with some slides on the economy.
You in charge.
Thank you. I think it's afternoon now. 1 minute past the afternoon. Good afternoon to Sorry, it's 9 minutes to go. Good morning. I think for us it's already afternoon. We've always said the Western Cape should be in a different time zone.
Right. You know, there's an hour difference between Durban and why I'm looking for Northern. The sunrise is 60 minutes different. In Kimberley, it's precisely 2.5. 30 minutes different. So the BBC is right. But don't try to do it in South Africa.
They like to.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm with Jeff Machele, who is the Deputy Director General for Sustainable Resource Management. I will just present a brief overview on the economy and the way in which we try to manage the issue of the tight fiscal space.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Machele will present on the actual financial outcome. So just to say by way of introduction, I think that everybody is aware that Gauteng accounts for 33.9% of the country's GDP. So we do have the largest economy, but it's an economy that has faced a great deal of complexities in recent years because, as you all know, mining has been in decline for many years. From the late 1990s, the finances and services sector became the dominant sector of the economy together with government services. And I think in recent times, we have understood, together with a global trend, that if one wants to deal with the problems of unemployment that we face, and one also wants to deal with growing Gauteng's economy, then we have to confront the challenge not just of growing the economy, but also the challenge of reindustrialization. So we have adopted a new economic development plan about 18 months ago. What that plan does is it focuses, it divides the province into five corridors. And it tries to look at each corridor and say what has emerged as the areas of economic expertise and benefit in that particular corridor and how will we grow it. So obviously one would understand that Johannesburg is the center of the financial services sector. There's obviously still a lot of light industry in Johannesburg, but in terms of emerging industries, the ICT sector is an important emerging sector in Johannesburg, and also the pharmaceutical sector. Finally, is where we have our automotive cluster, and I think that this has been one of the most successful reindustrialization projects over the last 20 years. And many different motor vehicle companies are headquartered there. There's a very big supplier park, and we also have our innovation hub. And I think that that is where we are focusing on the whole issue of research and development, because one of the things we understand is that you can't just make things here, you also have to own the intellectual property. So the development of OEMs is a very important activity in the city of Tshwane, and obviously also business process outsourcing is another area that is very big, and it's an important area for the absorption of young people, because the people with a matric can go into the BPO sector fairly easily. Ekurhuleni remains the manufacturing heartland of the province, and we have been doing a lot of work around the Aerotropolis. You would know that is where O.R. Tambo International Airport is located, and it is what we are building into. It is now the biggest port in the country, bigger than Cape Town and Durban, although it is an inland port. So the whole issue of freight and logistics is very important there, a transport node and a transport hub. But because there is a special economic zone at the O.R. Tambo International Airport, it's also attracting a lot of agro-processing and all other kinds of manufacturing into that particular region. We then have two regions that have been historically very economically depressed. The first is the West Rand, and even today, 35% of the GDP of the West Rand would be from the mines. But there's still 35,000 jobs in the gold mining sector on the West Rand, and a lot of our focus there, working together with the Chamber of Mines, is to try and protect the existing investment and protect the existing jobs, while we also look at how the West Rand can become a service sector to the platinum belt, which is just down the road from the West Rand. It's also an important place for growing food in our province, so there's a lot of work we are doing to support the agricultural sector and particularly the agro-processing sector. It's also an area that we are looking at for farming of solar energy. And then we have the cradle of mankind there, very important World Heritage Site, so tourism is a very big issue in the West Rand. Similarly, in Sedibeng, again, a very depressed area, once upon a time, the heartland of steel production. We've been doing a lot of work with ArcelorMittal to try and protect the steel industry there, but at the same time what we understand is we've got to support tourism and agro-processing, because those industries are obviously important industries to mitigate the job losses that have occurred in the steel sector. If we can go on to the next slide. Who's working the presentation?
Please forward that slide to us. You don't have that page.
Yeah.
That
I
page tells the story.
No, we will.
We have the hard copy, so you can.
These slides are not in the hard copy because we've added just some slides on the kind of. Okay, so what this slide just shows you is it shows you the 11 economic sectors that we are focusing on out of the growth and development strategy. And we can broadly characterize those sectors into two categories. The first would be manufacturing, and the second would be the services sector. So in terms of manufacturing, it's automotive and components, food and beverage, furniture and timber, machinery and equipment. Machinery, the production of machinery, particularly for the mining sector, is one of the most significant sectors for the creation of jobs. It's also one of the most significant sectors in terms of ownership of intellectual property, because you would understand that South Africa has got a historical advantage when it comes to the production of mining equipment. And one of the things that we are trying to do is to promote the export of that equipment into the African continent. It obviously has been negatively impacted on by the collapse of the commodity prices over the last couple of years, but with the partial recovery in commodity prices, we're starting to see an uptake in the exports of that sector. So that I think is going to become a very important export sector for the province. Pharmaceuticals, mineral and mining beneficiation, and lastly, of course, construction, very important sector in our province. And then services, the creative industry, BPO I've already spoken to, finance and retail, information and communication technology, transport and logistics and tourism, all of those in important sectors, particularly for the uptake of professionals on the one hand, and then at the other extreme, young people who would not necessarily have a lot of formal education. If we can just move on, Jeff, to the next slide. Just to show you what we've managed to achieve over the last 2.5 years, the creation of 317,000 net jobs. I think we're also pleased to see that this quarter shows the creation of 80,000 jobs in our province. And I'm going to show you the link. I thought, Chairperson, you would be very interested in the research that we've done as a province on the link between job creation and the infrastructure spend.
It's important that you do that in the
yeah.
Because we want to tell other provinces as well, look at what Gauteng is doing. Take something from the chapter in Gauteng.
Just go back to you've gone on too far. Okay. Attracted 66 billion in foreign direct investment into the province. 41% of all tourists come to Gauteng, and you would understand that because we don't have mountains and sea, those tourists come there for business.
Well, the fall there.
And well, yes, unfortunately, unlike the Cape Town Dam, we've got a little bit of water in it at the moment. But those tourists are not really coming for the fun. They come for business purposes,
yeah,
for shopping and other economic activities.
The conference economy.
The conference, yes, what we call MICE meetings, expos, conferences, exhibitions, and so on. We have this big program that will be relaunched tomorrow as Temple 1 Million. It's a program that aims to take up 1 million young people into formal jobs, entrepreneurship, training and skills development and transitional employment. So far, 350,000 young people have come in there. It's a very big program with partnerships with the private sector. It's not something we're trying to do on our own. Educational outcomes, 7 out of every 10 learners who start grade 1 in Gauteng pass the trick. So that's a statistic we are very proud of. So it's not just about matric pass, but it's also about flow-through rates. And the last one we thought the committee would be interested in, because again, this is a concern that honourable members have about welfare payments. We have a program called Welfare to Work, and we've managed to transition 10,500 young people off welfare grant, young women, particularly the child support grant, into sustainable employment. And it's a program that we are looking at trying to increase the uptake and the numbers. So we think although unfortunately money for social grants that we save doesn't come directly to us, maybe you can recommend that to Treasury. a very interesting program. We can move on, Jeff. Just to show you, we've done a study with KPMG. And what we did was we said, let's take our infrastructure spend from 2013-14 to 2015-16. But the total infrastructure spend for that 3-year period was 29.5 billion. It grew at an annual rate of 20.7%. And we said, let's look at what is the impact of that infrastructure spend on the province.
516 in your back.
Yeah, it is. You do have that slide. So the first thing that you said was that the total contribution of this 29.5 billion rand spend was it added 26.5 billion to the provincial economy. Over a 3-year period, it created 92,000 direct jobs. So what you can see, honourable members, is almost one third of the net jobs that we created came from the infrastructure spend. So I think that we are highlighting that to say to honourable members that government spend in a period of recession is very important in terms of job creation and in terms of impacting positively on the economy. Our estimation is 69,000 indirect and induced jobs. So when you add the indirect jobs, you're looking at almost half of the new jobs that we've created coming from government spend. So I think that we must not underestimate the importance of that infrastructure spend. And also, as I always say to my colleagues, the very negative effect if you don't spend, because there is the evidence, yeah. Impact on tax revenue for National Treasury, 6 billion in tax revenue, and then the impact on households, particularly poor households. 15 billion going into households, 2.6 of that going directly into lower income households. You can go to the next one,
Steve. I can use this space to make a motion in the House structure.
Now this one, honourable members, is our projection. So what we're saying is over the next 3 years we're projecting to spend 4.2 billion. We won't be growing at such a rapid rate. Unfortunately, we'll only be growing at 6%, but that's clearly, honourable members, because of the fiscal consolidation that we all face. But there it is. We are saying that should we manage to spend that, the impact is going to be 190,000 direct jobs and 140,000 indirect jobs, and then the other value add is there for everybody to read. We can move on. Coming to the complexities of housing, and really what this slide is to show you is that Gauteng has a tremendous problem of in-migration. We estimate that we receive 250,000 new citizens every year. And so what that means is that since 2011 we've had 2.1 million migrants have come into the province. And you would understand, because when you want to look at the problems in health and education, this is what is causing the problems in health and education. Because every year, even though Elisi the Sufi has closed his online registration in January, there will be 50,000 people who didn't register, and they will just arrive at school. And we all know exactly what is happening to our health institutions. So we just thought that it's important to contextualize this, because it is one of the things that poses the most difficult problems for us. So how are we trying to deal in this time of fiscal consolidation, where the revenue envelope is not growing and the population is getting bigger and bigger and bigger? So the first thing that we have done is to improve our own revenue collection, and you will see we've done a lot of work there. We think that with the exception of health, we are at the outer edges. Health and gambling, we want to review our gambling taxes, but there are appeals by interested bodies, so those regulations have been delayed. But we think that we are at the outer limits of how we can expand our own revenue, with one exception, and that is with collection from health. And we have just introduced in health successfully a pilot project at Kukani Baragwan Hospital. It's an IT verification product. We've used it very successfully in our own provincial departments to root out ghost employees. I went there and tried it out myself. You just put your thumb there and your whole life history comes up. It's actually scary. I have a sense knows all sorts of things about me I didn't know about you. but what was really interesting is while I was there, a foreign national arrived. And he came with this long story. He had left his ID at home and yada, yada, yada. Feeling here, nothing. Sorry, sir, you're not South African. No, you see, you've got to understand that this and that and everything. Eventually he said, okay, I give up. I'm a Zimbabwean. I'm coming to you. So it went live about 2 weeks ago. If it manages successfully, we are going to introduce it in all the other big hospitals. And it's one of the ways that because you've seen the accruals in health, one of the things that we've got to do is we have to enhance the revenue generation. And what is important about the system is it tells you, is the person employed? Does the person have a medical aid? And it's off the Home Affairs database. So when people run out of medical aid, they still have to pay in our hospitals. When people are from other countries, they still have to pay in our hospitals, and now we have the proof. So I think that is going to be very important for us. In terms of, obviously, if you can't get more income, then you've got to save money. And so the important thing that we want to do is to further cut down on waste. We're managing through the Treasury circulars, we're managing to reprioritize about 200-250 million a year. So that's cutting out all the nice to have. But we also last year managed to save about 400 million just by paying service providers on time. So not having to pay interest on overdue accounts. And you would understand we still have a problem with health. But in the rest of the province, we are, with the exception of health, education and DIT, we're now running at between 97% and 100% payment within 30 days. We have also introduced this thing of the open tender system. That is where we adjudicate our tenders in public. Today, 72 projects worth $12.5 billion have gone through that system. This year, we will be up to 80% of new tenders going through the open tender system. It helps to reduce irregular expenditure. It helps to cut down on the court cases and the disputes around tender processes. And that obviously also helps to cut down on legal fees and things like that. I think at the moment we've only got 2 tenders in the whole province where there's a dispute in court, and in the previous administration, almost every second tender was in court. So it's that is definitely helping us, as well as promoting and strengthening public accountability. The third thing that we are doing is we are actively using public procurement to transform the economic landscape. And you would have heard, I'm sure, those of you who are listening to the news and so on, Premier Makura is very passionate about the township economy revitalization. We are now spending 23% of our goods and services budget on procuring from township entrepreneurs. It amounted to $7 billion in the previous term. We've got 7,000 entrepreneurs registered on our government database. We're using about 250,000 of them, and we've got another, 2,500 of them, and we've got another 2,500 in supplier development programs. Because one of the things we've realized is it's one thing to take that decision, it's another thing to find suppliers who can supply you. So that supplier development is very important. And then the last thing is growing our infrastructure spend so that on-budget initiatives and off-budget initiatives, because I've already shown you the positive effect it has on the creation of jobs. I'm going to pause there. I'm going to hand over to Mr. Mashele. Have you managed to update them?
Do you have an additional copy there for the secretary? Because I must now minute. And it's very difficult because they're working from that screen now. And they don't have it in front of them.
We'll clean it all up for you, Chair.
Please.
And we'll give it to the secretary.
Important members to look at the compensation of employees, taking you back to the pauper. That, what do you call it, the pie? Yes, that was 72%. Yes? Registered, yeah. When you look at the other provinces. You know?
On the one that you collect is, at the end of the financial year, we have the budget by 400 million. Yes, how comfortable now, the department that closest to that would be your department of Treasury, Road and Transport, that at least contributes to the over-collection of revenue. I think we already have had an indication from the National Treasury. Expenditure to date, we are at 99%. We have spent 104.4 billion of the 105.2 billion. obviously that those departments that did not spend as much as we expected them, you are COFTA, and also you are Department of Community Safety. They are as well business for them. Compensation of employees, as you indicated, Chairperson, when another technical speaker as well has commented us with regard to the management of compensation of employees, we are, as a share of our compensation expenditure, is 55% of the overall GPG budget, which is very important that at least we know that. Despite us making this particular point, it is very important that as well we highlight the aspect that as well is still a challenge with regard to the Department of Health and Education, which at least came out of the budgeted compensation of employees, partly because of the reason that already the MSC indicated with regard to immigration, because they have at least to employ more, and in some instances it is because of the overtime. And this affects your major two social departments, that will be your education and health. Overall, we are fine, but those two departments remain departments that are very close to our eyes with regard to assisting them to be able to at least like budget and spend within the allocated budget on the compensation of employees. But the rest of the department, we have at least managed to bring that in line. Those are just the top 15 goods and services budget. What we are saying is that we have at least spent 94% of the adjusted budget on the goods and services, and those is what we call the top 15 items that at least we utilize in the process that will move from your inventory medicine into professional services for your business and advisory. That is the kind of the picture with regard to how we have at least spent. On your conditional grant, we have at least spent 98%, which is 18.5 billion. When I talk about maybe this, I will exercise to tie it up with the next slide, because when you look on the conditional grant, the majority of what at least will be driving your conditional grant will be your human settlement conditional grant, but that is also linked into your infrastructure. The two will at least talk to each other. There are two departments, and I think Major Sejal indicated when they at least highlighted some of the aspects on our fiscal position, the Department of Education with regard to infrastructure, they could not be able to at least like build the number of schools that they at least anticipated to build. And that was partly on the basis of land not being made available on time for them to be able to build. The issue of land isn't a big issue in housing in terms of at least getting land to be able to and this affected even the Department of Sports and Recreation and Culture with regard to the construction of their life studies as well. They wanted to build six, but then the land was not made available. And the issue that you spoke about in the beginning, when you say we need at least to strengthen the intergovernmental relations, is very, very important, because you find that sometimes the land is not owned by the police, but it's owned by another state or another organ of the state. And in terms of facilitating the usage of that land, it takes a bit longer. And I think the system needs access to improve in that regard, the ones we tend to affect. I will talk to this with regard to what we are actually doing to actually convince this kind of a situation whereby you have the budget, but you cannot be able to procure or to begin with constructing on the basis of land not being available. On the infrastructure side, what we have seen is out of the budget of 12.8 billion, we have spent 12.3, which is 96%, and then 459 has not been spent. And this will as well link when you look at this picture. We start to see clearly that the Department of Education is the one that could not spend the biggest of the under expenditure, as you're sitting here, 177 million of the 459 they have not been able to spend. And despite us trying to come with different interventions, we assisted, but then there remain issues with regard to having the land on time to be able to procure. quickly on the social sector, I think this slide is just let's make a comparison with the gas infrastructure delivery on the three departments, which are social sector, that is your health, education, and social development. I'll just jump it through. And those are basically the narrative with regard to this, like that particular slide, the health. And that is what it is, they will have, it is done in this financial year. And out of the 5.2 billion of what will have been allocated in this department, they have been able to spend 95%, which is 4.9 billion. And the reason why we basically want to leave this is because this is basically like the area where at least it makes a dent with regard to what government at least would be referring to, the poor, the facilities that at least are supported today for the poor of the poorest in terms of accessing them. We are not talking about the economic, but then only this. And we are saying we will have at least wanted to ensure that it will spend 100%, but we'll spend 95%. And it's still linked into the aspect that at least I have highlighted, the issue of the system having land and all of that in education. When you look at the economic infrastructure, this is just kind of how we have spent. I've noticed indeed the concern that would have been raised in the earlier presentation with the human settlement, that when we look at human settlement, we will have at least find that indeed we will have spent almost everything that at least would have been there, and that more than 25% would have been spent in the last year, last month of the financial year. Even as a special, we as well highlighted those things. However, we understood when we at least engaged with the department that there would have been agreement with the at the sector level. One, it delays them with regards at least like going ahead to at least do certain things, because there was an aspect of a delay with regards to the division of the business plan between the provincial department and the national department. Further, and above that, when they realized that the year is coming to an end, and as like they could not be able to at least like spend all the money, they were at least given a special permission by the National Human Settlement to be able to at least say, we know that for you to be able to at least build a house, you will need to have land. Then they were at least allowed. Then the transferment, that at least would have went, it was transferred to at least go and discuss how to purchase a strategic land which should be used for the construction of the houses in the coming financial year, unlike at least during the month. That is at least what would have at least happened. But that would have at least has been done in agreement with the National Department of Human Settlement. Then when you look in the books, it might look as if it is indeed we were concerned as much as the Chancellor was concerned, but then when we engage, we realize that there's an agreement or an arrangement with the National Human Settlement to say, can you at least be able to do it? That I'm just at least explaining the same point. Unauthorized expenditure. When we look at the unauthorized expenditure, we have come, we said no department incurred an unauthorized expenditure in the 2014-15, which at least was good. 15-16, we have at least had one department that at least had an unauthorized. The unauthorized for the previous financial year, which was 1.8 billion, we will have at least cleared those through a process of the scope. Those were for the other years. And then we have at least been able to clear those. When you look at the trend, you can see that the trend is showing that we fell from the high there where we at least had that, and it has at least went down with regard to an unauthorized. Irregular expenditure, it moved in 2013 from the 3.7 billion into 4 billion in 2015-16. Maybe I need to put a context, because the majority of what is sitting here, it will be from the Department of Road and Transport. And sometimes when you, as you say, the Department of Road and Transport has an irregular expenditure of 2 billion, it can send a different message. But when you understand exactly what would have happened, it's, there is a contract of the bus contract for the transportation of people within a particular or within the province. That particular contract is not entered by us, but it has been entered at a national level. That contract has expired. There have been issues which at least need to be sorted out, legal issues that need to be sorted out. And currently, because of that contract, which has expired at national level, and we cannot enter into any new contract currently, it creates that thing of saying that because you keep on like just using the contract which has expired, but you cannot at least enter into anything new, it basically results into the AG, because in their system, it remains an irregular expenditure, because it is like you are continuing with a contract that at least you have not went out on tender. But it's because of that kind of a situation whereby National is at least working together with even the bus operator to at least come to a point where they at least fix that particular aspect. And as such, it looks the irregular, it becomes like huge and huge and huge. But it's because of the 2 billion that is sitting for housing, it is because of the under the bus operator, under the contract grant of a public transport operation grant. It is a particular grant. And this is because of this arrangement with National Department of Transport. What we do on a yearly basis, we at least ask for a condolment. This is the kind of how we can deal with it. We ask for a condolment for it because it is not because of anything which is untoward, but it's because of the system in which SS is currently working. And I just wanted to bring this into this particular aspect. There is this aspect that at least it is appearing as if there's something which is going on. Food gas and waste food expenditure, we, and the MSC already alluded to say, when you look at our numbers, you will see that at least like our numbers have been at least like coming a little bit down on the basis that at least we have been able to pay, was like some of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it would be the interest that you pay on your overdue claim. And once you are at least able to pay within these days, you are at least saving to at least pay that interest. As such, like our fruitless and wasteful expenditure has been coming down in 2015, I think only 9 million, and it's consisted of those particular departments. I have an updated slide because I think I wanted this to present it in a similar way in which SS National Stadium has shared with yourself. So what you are seeing there is the 2016 figure, and what we did was to say, let's basically report a figure that SS will have reported, because now it is in the AFS, we are still waiting for the final audit outcome, hence at least went to what it is out there. But the figure that at least has been reported by National Stadium is true. It is, we are seeing at 9 billion, 7 billion is basically the Department of Health. And that it is indeed a concern for us, and I know that like the MSC will at least speak with regard to what measure that would have been taken, even at an executive level, with regard to at least ensuring that we work and assist the Department of Health. There are aspects that at least it would be speaking to your medical legal claims, which at least we do not budget for them. And as they overshoot, because you pay as when they present that particular court order before you, whether you have the budget or not. And as they pay, and in this financial year, I think we have paid in excess of 700 million, and that is money that would have been used for your goods and services. And as it takes the money away from your goods and services, it simply means that certain things will not be paid, and it's better that perpetuates this particular aspect. But also bearing in mind the other aspect that at least I think MSC Corona highlighted, and also my MSC with regard to when people present themselves within your facility, you cannot turn them back. Whether they are from your province, whether they are from South Africa, we cannot, on the human rights basis, you know, we have to at least look into them. Chairperson, you also alluded to the point that when you look at Gauteng, Gauteng is a heartland, it's an economic hub, and everybody, Africa and other provinces, they basically converge in that particular small space. And as such, it means, therefore, the provision of services will have to be made available, whether you have resources for them or not. And that is basically the aspect that at least it's a dynamic that as well we need to be able to come to the other side and say, how do we deal with it? How do we manage it? But then we are as well a big concern about this aspect of the accruals in the Department of Health,
it's indeed a risk, and we are at this, like, committed to addressing with them. On the one particular aspect, and I think it was highlighted by Nathan Fletcher, on the accruals of human settlement when the ethics made the payment towards the last quarter of, or the last month of the month, they went to the government transfers, and you end up carrying their accrual. Then the simple explanation in there, it is because the majority of the money that we're talking about when we talk about human settlement is human. It is a conditional grant. Conditional grant has its own conditions with regard to what you can do. It will ethics say you must do this for the following reasons. Therefore, the accrual that ethics the department has incurred, I think in the last year we will have read, seen a lot of sporadic unrest in different places, you know, flanging up. And one of the issues that ethics will come up will be the issue of housing. And what the communities will actually start to want to do will be to go and occupy a government land that we are intending to develop. Then on the basis of that, you end up increasing your security to actually protect all those particular land parcels that you have in your store. And as you do that, it means your goods and services will start going up. Then the accrual is specifically not for capex, the majority of it. It is for the goods and services, in particular the security, because we only allow to use 5% of the conditional grant to address the operational requirements of the department. And as such, the unforeseen nature of SS deploying security to SS go and guard some of our land parcels has resulted into the department SS having this approach, and they could not utilize the portion of the human settlement grant to have to pay. They have now written to the national minister to be granted a special a condition or a special dispensation to use the HSDG to pay for this accord. Because if that is not granted, we'll as well have this, because they are...
Start wrapping up, please.
I think that was basically like the last, the last but one slide, Jefferson. The conclusion is that like, we're spending 99%. We, on the total budget that we were allocated, and also that the conditional grant, we have at least spent 98%, which we are conditionally happy, because ideally we would at least want 100% as per the MSC target to us to say we should at least ensure that conditional grant we spend to everything that is allocated to us. We are as well concerned about the accrual in health, and we hope that at least like, with some of the ex-co resolution that has come up, will at least assist us to be able to go and work with the Department of Health in dealing with the accrual. Thank you.
Chair,
okay.
If I may just
say
something might help. Just for honourable members' information, the budget for goods and services in the Department of Health is 13.4 billion in the previous financial year. 9.1 billion of the invoices were paid within 30 days. 4.3 billion was paid in excess of 30 days, and the average payment time in the Department of Health was, for an invoice, was 65 days. I think in education and DID, which are our other departments that we're worried about in terms of 30-day payments, education, the average day payment is 32 days. And there was only 700 million that was paid outside worth of invoices that were that was paid outside of the 30 days. DID, the average payment is 23 days, and it was also 500 and something million that was paid outside of 30 days. So it's really health where our focus has to be. We have taken a decision as an executive council to set up a special executive subcommittee to look into the finances of health. I think the key issue that we want to implement, there are two key things that we want to deal with. The first thing is budget management, because the major spenders are the tertiary hospitals, and we have to make sure that the tertiary hospitals spend within their financial envelope, and we believe that the controls are not strong enough. So the big focus there is on budget management, and to make sure that there's about 2 billion rand that is of the goods and services budget that is held in stock, medical stock. And we think that's a problem. You can't have accruals on the one hand and 2 billion rand worth of medical stock on the other. So I think that it's about budget management, but also the issue of just-in-time and appropriate procurement on the one hand. On the other hand, I've already spoken about how we want to increase the revenue, and I've said to health that once you meet your revenue target, everything else we will give you back, so that we try to find a way to incentivize these hospitals to generate revenue so that they will receive that revenue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to the provinces giving us the snapshot of what's happening in your province in terms of your fiscal position. All the members, going straight to the questions, please be short and to the point. It's a pity that the other members left, but Dr. Matema, and then anyone else? Let me just go around the two members that came a bit late. It's the Honorable Zamandi from KZN. It's actually where the sun rises. And the Honorable Essa from Mpumalanga. Dr. Matema?
First, how do we play it? Do I say all at once what I need to say
provinces,
or do we go province by province?
No, that's why I said in the beginning, note all your points you want to raise with a specific province.
So
you take Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Gauteng.
Thank you very much. May I start with the Western Cape? There is a... There's a map here, geographic map, yeah, on the front. Now the presentation of the data, Chair, I'm concerned, I see some inconsistency. When we come to the unemployment, we express it in terms of percentage, whereas the other figures are in terms of head count. So I would wish to know this percentage here in terms of head count, what does it translate into? That is the unemployment figure. That's my first point for Western Cape. My second point, without sounding like I'm racist, Jefferson, as we transform society, we cannot run away from disaggregating data into race groups, because we just want to make sure we do not leave anybody behind as we transform Jefferson. The figures oftentimes and the reports that we often get as the NCOP Chair does not always tally with the reality which we saw when we visited the Eden District, which is part of the Western Cape, Jefferson. I must share with the meeting here, I'm born and grew up in a homeland, but the disparities that I saw in Eden were worse than the homeland I grew up in. So, as we transform and as we report, Jefferson, the democratic dispensation believes in equity. Equity meaning those who previously got less must now get more. I'm not convinced that is the picture we're seeing here. That is for Western Cape. For Gauteng, I'm not going alphabetical. For Gauteng, I think we commend them for the best practices, for the innovation so that they have. But I just want to know about the spike. Is it towards March, end of financial year? It said that the expenditure was extraordinary. So I'm not sure it's some physical dumping or how is that expenditure coming about? Where is the money being pushed to? I just need some clarity there because best practice seems to be emerging in Gauteng, but this one was missing. People of the Rising Sun. Yes. Just a sense, the reality of our country, they talk about the human rights philosophy we ascribe to as a country, that when people present themselves to your facility for services, the Ubuntu culture doesn't allow you to send them away. Now, I sympathize with their situation. I think my own province, Limpopo, where I come from, you go to Mosina, you don't know whether you are in Zimbabwe or you are in South Africa. That is the reality of our time. But I would like to know how they say to us the Godel mechanism, you know, this thumbprint mechanism. So from Mpumalanga, how are we grappling with this reality? Those are my questions. Thank you.
I'll go to Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. I just want to start by thanking the provinces for their presentations. You know, I have a special relationship with all of them. I was born in the Western Cape and I spent my whole working life in Gauteng, and I enjoyed going to the to the Kruger Park. But I remain.
So you did some investment.
Yes, I did. But I remain a very, very loyal Western Cape person representing the Western Cape here. Thank you. I'm going to start with Gauteng. You know, really, I was very impressed with all the presentations today. But there are certain issues of concern, obviously. And you know, starting with the first thing is once again our old stumbling block, and that is infrastructure development. Infrastructure development, and I listened very attentively to what the gentleman told us. And you know, I would recommend that, you know, you maybe revisit, you know, the process that they're doing. And especially now, you know, to get around, you know, the site clearance. You know, I've worked with this for a very long time in my life, and the site clearance, only the EIA, you know, can take up to 2 years. So you need to have a process, an implementation plan process, where you are going to start with site identification well in advance. And once the site has been identified, only then the site clearance starts. And after that, obviously, you can only get to the planning phase and then eventually, you know, invite tenders and start the construction process. Because that is something that if you don't do it that way, you are going to be stuck with this forever. That is just, you know, on the infrastructure. My main concern, Chairperson, regarding Gauteng is the claims against the state. And specifically, you know, in the health environment, apparently they are dealing with health issues, but their finances are not that healthy. So maybe that is something, you know, that we'll really, we need to pursue that.
and something needs to be done. We cannot spend that type of money on legal claims, you know, to settle legal claims. So that is just briefly on that. And then obviously also, you know, I've touched on the litigation infrastructure. And then I was just wondering, you know, in Gauteng, if you deal with issues regarding infrastructure stalls, surely you can spend a lot of money on maintenance, the maintenance of buildings. And that is maybe something that you also can, you know, pursue to once again help you to get you in the infrastructure sort of budget spend. That was Gauteng, Chairperson. Coming to the Western Cape, and please I'm not biased or whatever, but you know, it's the very first problem that I hear, and I want to congratulate you on that, that came here and presented to us that you don't have an over expenditure on personnel and posts that are still not full. So really, I think that is also best practice. I think the stuff, jumping back to Gauteng now again, I've heard a lot of best practices also from Gauteng this month. And maybe this is something, you know, you as, you know, some of the leading problems of the three of you, maybe you should, you know, engage one another and see what you can learn from one another, because really, you are the guys that will be able to give us a lot of guidance and get to a point where we can save a lot of money. The Western Cape also, they had minor issues, Chairperson, about capital works once again. And I was just wondering about the good practice, and I've heard that Gauteng managed to pay the Gautrain in full. And maybe that is something that the Western Cape must pursue. Just on a lighter note, we're battling with the traffic here, by the way. So maybe you must also pursue a Gautrain or a Cape train, whatever. Lastly, Chairperson, coming to Mpumalanga, the people from the Sun. Also only minor things like, for instance, capital-related issues. And yes, you know, I was quite also encouraged by the way that you, you know, indicated to us, how do you intend to grow your economy there, being in Mpumalanga, you're not Gauteng or Cape Town. But, Chairperson, thank you. That's just my observations. Thank you.
I recognize Colonel Simandi.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the Western Cape one, Chair, just also recognizing the continued positive contributions, Chair, to the economic management, but one or two issues of clarity. First one, I'm not too sure whether I agree totally with my colleague here, Oki, on COE and the expenditure, Chair. They said, I think they said that it's because of the determination of the upper limits, but then does that talk to proper budgeting then, Chair, in terms of what, you know, it's, if it still comes as a negative, or, you know, it contributes to underspend. So if they can just, clarify a little bit in terms of going forward on that matter. Then the, just the other one, generally, Chair, to understand that in three entities which have had clean audit, they've regressed to an unqualified audit, just to understand what happened there, that would, you know, regressing would not be a good way. So we don't know whether they would regress worse than that. Then the third aspect on them, Chair, relates to, you know, I'm not too sure, you know, just on revenue collection, that they sort of over they over collected compared to what they prepared, and it seems to be their trend. So just to understand, so they feel comfortable to be on the conservative side, so that then they show a growth or an over correction. Perhaps if they can just tell us, you know, what, because it is a trend that they plan something now, but then they plan less and they go over. All right, so I think it's a potential that they have to sort of classify how to do they plan to balance it out going forward. And then the question, just general question now that the MEC from Mpumalanga made a comment on this and. Calling what Limpopo said on the stealing of commodities in the mines. The MEC on its opening remarks mentioned that they do you know think that you know on the mines they would perform very well, but what is the problem in terms of the you know, the book was crying about the trucks that overnight, you know, steal from the mines in Limpopo and has a negative impact on economic growth. Is that a trend in Mpumalanga, or is not a trend? What do they do? What lessons, if they do better, that we can hear about? Because we said we committed to help Limpopo to, you know, to try and deal with that problem. Thank you, Chair.
Any other member? There would be a second round.
Over here, sir. There was a man who, I think, mostly a comment. You know, year in, year out, Mpumalanga comes. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can be, but with due respect, I mean, staff debt, and we've raised this 2 years ago, raised it earnestly last year, and it keeps coming up, and I really don't know, but with due respect, Chairperson, where is this going to end up in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and then suddenly, you know, a journal and a couple of million is just written off, period. It's ridiculous, and I don't think we can carry on, with due respect, carry on condoning issues like staff debt. There's something seriously wrong within the management of the finances. I just wanted to make that comment, Chairperson. Thank you.
Just one quick one, I forgot.
A very quick one.
Yeah. They made a point that they had six municipalities and looking at taking over another municipalities in terms of the debt collection.
Which province is that?
Pumalanga. Yes, I think Pumalanga. They said they would add Vekakanya and it's on its way, or it's already in. If they could just give us more clarity, some detail in terms of, you know, what are they putting them in under what section and that kind of thing, Jack? What mechanisms are they using?
In terms of them taking over, what it means. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
For the okay. I would like to know what informs the conservative projection. What that does in that approach, what advantages do they enjoy? Secondly, if they could disaggregate in age, the data of the unemployed,
according to over and above the race I referred to, if they could disaggregate also according to age and gender, so that we know which age group is affected, which gender is also affected, and so that we don't leave anybody behind as we develop things.
Well, members, a few meetings ago in appropriations, we had the National Treasury here and the Department of Human Settlements. And in the presentation, it was highlighted the underspending by metrics on the Urban Settlements Development Grant. And I just want to sensitize the MECs, Western Cape as well, I think you are in that category, that you zoom into this. This will definitely be part of the oversight program of Select Committee Appropriations and Finance. But we are meeting the metros the 2nd of August, on the 1st of August, National Treasury, to take us through that briefing. From my question, just a remark. The CEO initiative driven by the Minister of Finance, Excellency the President, at national level, what's happening in your province? Do you have such an initiative? What are you doing to engage the private sector? Because innovative thinking by government, 100% plus private sector equals, then you must go forward. Do the ISCO understand what an expenditure ceiling means? And fiscal consolidation. Lastly, to Mpumalanga, it's an abbreviation you use. You just get the GARDLEA, Darlia. What is that? Because I understand the lower spending of 28% is in your presentation of 128 million rand, but you don't clarify what it is. It's just one line. I'm going to stop there. I've got a lot of other issues, but the time is not in our side. So over to the provinces. You noticed the questions. I'm going to give you 10 minutes each, because that's going to take us up to 13:30, and then still National Treasury to reply as well. That will take us to 20 minutes to 2. Honorable Greasy.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. And I will beg the indulgence of the committee if by 20 past 1 we could be released, because we have a flight.
Right. We take you first in your reply.
I think the first question was Dr. Matema regarding the spike in housing. I think what DDT Mashele was explaining. Let me start with the previous financial year. And I think the Honourable Member will remember that housing was a significant underperformer in terms of spending. In fact, in the previous financial year, there was R1 billion of the conditional grant that was removed by National Housing because of significant underspending. And I think that there was a new MEC was appointed in that department with the intention of turning around delivery and also spending. There was a significant period of time where there was a dispute with the national department on the plan, because these are conditional grants and they have to be approved by the national department in order that spending can take place. As a consequence of that, it delayed construction. There was then a meeting with the national department to discuss if, as a result of interdepartmental delay, we have not been able to spend, what can we do in order that we can spend? I'm sure in other situations you have heard about the mega human settlements in Gauteng, because I think one of the things that we understand is that we can't go on building 30 RDP houses when we've got 250,000 people migrating into the province. And so we've taken this decision to build mega human settlements, and those settlements are a mix of public and private housing opportunities. And so a decision was then taken, approval was given by national government that we could buy land. And that approval came through in the last quarter of the financial year, and that is why you see that much spike in the Department of Housing. Honourable Tablanche, one of the just on the infrastructure development, I think that you would agree with me that infrastructure projects actually have a 2-year lead-in period, particularly if you're going to implement the IDMS. And one of the things we've spent a lot of time working with our department on is to understand there's 110 steps in the IDMS. But if you follow those 110 steps, you're not going to get scope creep and you're not going to get budget overrun. So you have to do things in the right way. We have an infrastructure committee, both a technical and a political committee, and the purpose of that committee is to monitor infrastructure spending and to intervene when departments are tardy. Particularly with our big departments, part of what it's been is a whole learning curve around the IDMS. EIAs are not such a problem for us because we've managed to cut down the time from 2 years to between 60 and 90 days for the EIAs. And part of what our Premier has been pushing us to do is to clear certain land parcels for development for certain purposes so that the EIAs are pre-done. And then you know this land is a wetland, you can't use it for high density occupation. This land is suitable for high density. So I think that really part of what we've been working on is the whole IDMS issue. You'll see that the spending by the big departments, with the exception of education, where the projects are very decentralized and there's land issues there, you'll see that health in particular spent a lot more on maintenance over the past couple of years, and there's actually been a switch away from building new clinics and new hospitals to refurbishing the old ones. And part of that would be that in Gauteng you would already meet your standards of one clinic every 5 kilometers. You might then be saying, well, you need more than one clinic because you've got high population density. But I think health has been now saying that one of the major things we've got to work on is the refurbishment. With regard to the contingent liability around the medico-legal plan, I think first of all, at a central level, through the Office of the Premier, we are also monitoring all of those plans so that you make sure you don't have a situation where there's some fishing trip by a lawyer and then you get an award against you which the state has not considered appropriately. But I think you would also know that Minister Motsoaledi is very concerned about the commercialization of medico-legal plans in the health sector. And our belief is that, yes, there is a legal issue. So you have to look at each of the clans and you have to look at whether you're going to settle or whether you're going to dispute. Secondly, there's a management issue. Because if there are issues around negligence and you find that most of those issues are in particular health facilities, then you have to look at the managerial issues. But lastly, I think that we are all agreed that unless we have a similar approach to health medico-legal plans to that approach which we have developed with regard to the road accident sector, all health departments in the country are at risk. Because it is definitely those lawyers that were working in the road accident sector are now working in the health sector. And most of those claims are, I don't know, what do you call this thing, where the lawyer comes and says, contingent. So he says, look, I'll take the case for nothing. If we win, I get this much, you get that much. And I mean, again, very often what the patient is getting is a bit sad compared with what the lawyer is getting. So my view, and I think Minister Mosweledi has been to the Executive Council on this matter, and we've said to him, we need legislation that is going to protect the state against the burgeoning of these kinds of legal claims. Honourable Chair, I think that with regard to the CEO initiative in our province, first of all, we do have regular meetings with all the different business formations. But in that economic development plan that I showed you, we actually, at the Executive Council, meet with the different sectors, cluster sectors. And we also do factory visits. So where, for example, ArcelorMittal, I mean, I have been there personally with the Premier. We have been through with them some of the issues that they are facing with regard to cheap steel imports. We worked very intensively with trade and industry to get protective tariffs. We've been back subsequently. We're looking at work they're doing around supplier development. That's just an example of a very big industry that a whole region is dependent on. We've got similar meetings with the Chamber of Mines around what's going on in the West Rand. So we think that it's important not just to meet formations, but to meet sectors and to understand on the ground what are the particular issues that are affecting different factories and how can help from either provincial or municipal government approach. You know, on whether EXCO understands fiscal consolidation, on a lighter note, when I was appointed as MEC for Finance, because I was MEC for Education, so I was a big spender. I met my predecessor, the former MEC of Finance in Gauteng. I said to him, please induct me. He says, this job is easy. It doesn't matter what the question is, the answer is there's no money. So I'm well known for that approach in the Executive Council. And they all start off by saying, MEC, I know there's no money, but... yeah, but we do, I mean... You would know that as MECs, we have been called on several occasions, both to National Treasury and to National Cabinet, to be told bad news about our budget. And we always then have to be the bearers of that bad news back to our own Executive Council. So we're not popular.
I know that. Okay, you're done. Thank you, Pumlanga. We take Western Cape last.
Thank you very much, Chair. The first question, I might not know, I wish to know, what Gauteng does when they put their finger and that it come out that the person is a foreigner. Maybe are those money the foreigners? But the ones which are coming to Mpumalanga from Mozambique and Swaziland, especially if you look at the economy of Mozambique and Swaziland, to start with, what do you expect, what do you think, as a nature of those people who are flocking into the province, what is it which can you ask from them? I think, but it's a...
Same with the Free State and the Shooter.
What the matter which we have done is that we are raising the matter. We hope that at one point National Treasury will listen when you talk about allocation. And also to take up this matter with the International Cooperative Department, because I think that it's a matter which can be easily handled nationally in terms of government-to-government relations, so that as a province we don't suffer as we are currently suffering and so on. But I understand they want to come to Gauteng, you know, they're coming from the other African countries, they want money. But we'll continue to engage on the matter to find a solution around that. On the trucks and the stealing in mind, the only experience we had was self-inflicted by certain owners of a certain mine, which they have a joint venture with a community, where themselves they were driving that so that they can run away from accountability to the same community which they got a joint venture with. Other than that, the other mines which we are talking about, they have not yet raised it as a matter which is a challenge. But I know Ngoma, the anthracite in Ngoma, where the same people who are in joint venture with their community, they are stealing the same raw material so that they declare less to the community and not held accountable in terms of what they declare. So, but that is a matter which we have attended and we have since come in that space as the provincial government to assist. I share your sentiments about the issue which we are raising of staff debt. The only thing which I can say is that we are doing what we could. It's just that it becomes difficult sometimes when other people have already left the city, because you have to choose whether you enrich lawyers or what do you do. Because to run after 2 million and end up paying more than that, what is the net benefit of government at the end of the day? We want to recover, but sometimes we are at a point where we have to choose whether we have to spend more for getting less so that you clear the debt and so on. So there are those cases. But most of them, of course, are historical from 2012, 2013, coming from that time and so on. But those who are within the state, employer of government, we are recovering those costs. What we could not understand was that how did it happen anyway. That's the matter which was raised to say, let us stop this thing, because sometimes we are told that there were advances and everything and so on which were happening, which we have since stopped. No longer happening. Probably that's why you could see that it's going down slightly, because of there are less of those who are still within the system. Around the municipalities take over, we are taking over our function. These municipalities are dealing with the motor vehicle licenses as the agency to us as the provincial government. So what happens, they don't pay us the money which they're supposed to pay to the provincial government. They first deal with their problem, and then whatever left, if any, then is what we are going to get. So we said enough is enough. Now we are taking over that function back to the provincial government so that we don't rely to them to do that function. That's why you could see that our revenue generation or own revenue is going up. Because now we have a control in some of the 6 municipalities which were highly problematic. Victor Kanye, they've just volunteered that they think that we must take over the function because they start to default. So they could see coming that anyway, we're going to reach the same conclusion. They rather just come forward and say we must take over that function ourselves. Around the issue of ESCO understanding expenditure ceiling, no and yes. I think they do understand, but it's the issue of everyone when you leave a meeting but still come and say, can I get, despite the explanation, I think my colleague has said very well. I was told that if we are the unlucky one or you are given the provincial treasury of finance, because you are an enemy to everyone. No one likes you. Because you can't satisfy anyone. You are put in a position where you can't satisfy anyone, and then you are just the unlucky person that everyone is going to like you. But probably that it comes with a... Exactly. The HOD will respond on the issue of DASHA, but DASHA means the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development, Land and Environmental Affairs. On the issue of the CEOs, we are engaging them following the national approach, but we engage those on the sectors which we are focusing on. As you may know, that as a province, we are huge in mining, agriculture, and forests. And mines, we've got more than 200 mines in the province who are mining as I speak, and more than 180 companies in the province. But we are also engaging with the state-owned companies, CEOs, because we fail to understand sometimes to say, how do you have the high number of power stations of Eskom in Mpumalanga, but there's no return for the province. So we are engaging vigorously with even the state-owned companies to say, we think that we cannot just be the province of supplying coal and the power station pollution happening in the province and so on, and then when it comes to the slice of the pie, it happens somewhere else. So what we want to see things start to happen in the province so that the province is able to beneficiate around the national resources which we are having and so on. But we are also engaging now with your forestry because we think that there's an opportunity. Sometimes we'll say we don't have land available, but we are not exploiting what you call agroforestry. Because there is what you call agroforestry, where you can still use the same land where they planted for forestry to grow your fresh produce or your produce, which you can eat and so on. And also the issue of, since now Mpumalanga has got a university, how then do you take the brain of forestry and agriculture back into the province? Because now we are back from outside the province. So we find that provinces like Western Cape, which have no huge number of forestry and so on, but they've got their plain of forestry and so on, not the province where the forestry is, so that we are able to maximize the benefit around that. Thank you very much. The HOT can respond on the data issue.
That was innovative thinking. Congratulations. HOT, I'll give you 4 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. Sincere apologies for putting an abbreviation without a description. We cannot begin to behave like head people who will put NHIMHLS this and that, and you never understand what it was. Sincere apologies, Honorable Member. The reasons where we were negatively impacted upon as that sector by the drought, and there were delays in starting the agricultural project or program. But when that improved, then the department started hence the delay. But because we are aware of those commitments, the department will definitely participate in the rollovers and will be supportive. That was the reason for that sector. That in the past has never had problems in delay in implementing. Maybe if I'm allowed to just briefly, how did we take the ceiling further into other sectors in the department? As we indicated, the joint action plan of budget council, the issue of moratorium with its negative impact, however, we've taken that there is no CFO that must be appointed if there's a database of chief financial officers, another application, chief financial officers in the system, and that has been done. We will find the chief financial officer within in trying to keep the ceiling. The minister has given the issue of the ceiling in a number of the medium-term budget and policy statements. My principal next to me and the executive taken this to the organized labor in the past few days and said, here is the This is the meaning of a fiscal package that was defined way back in 2014, 15, 16, 17. They were given those documents. We were given opportunity as treasury to put together a PowerPoint presentation to say what then is the meaning of this. If there's a ceiling, minister says, I will put a ceiling and I will reduce the expenditure by 25 billion. How did it translate to budget cuts in provinces? How did we then follow the freezing of post, freezing of vacant funded posts that have remained unfilled for a number of years? How do you put a ceiling in goods and services to an extent that you would say to education, here's a goods and service budget, but in terms of items that are meant for, here is a ceiling for those. That's in a nutshell, I'm not sure without taking a lot of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chief President, Honourable Members, thank you for the questions. I think we will try and be practical to this in our response. I think, Chairperson, just in relation to the disaggregation of the numbers and also in terms of some of the socioeconomic data that informs our budget strategy and our budget response. Chair, before we go into our budget decision making and the recommendations to our provincial expo, we do table, our MSC for Finance does table a medium-term budget policy statement, and that in itself is informed by two key research documents, and that is the Provincial Economic Review and Outlook, as well as the municipal counterpart of that document. And that in those documents, a complete disaggregation of the regional or district socioeconomic profile is contained, and we actually engage the local government space in terms of sharing that information with them. And we've done so in between the period of October to February last year. Chair, on the, what I would like to add is the members would like us to give that information. I mean, there are publications, so we're more than happy to share the documents. I mean, obviously in the presentation, we get the information at a high level.
Sure.
Chair, in relation to the issue of transport, I mean, we have, as a provincial government, engaged with the metro. I mean, that's where the bulk of our congestion problems are. And there are discussions around short to medium-term responses, and that it is an ongoing process. And I think as those things materialize, we can always feedback to the committee at some later stage. Chair, on the issue of sharing of best practices, and my colleagues will probably agree, I think thank you for referring those infrastructure recommendations to us. I mean, but as a treasury sector, my colleagues will attest to the fact that we're always working with one another and sharing information, and we learn from one another. So I think I speak on behalf of all of us in that regard. Chair, I wouldn't want to speak on behalf of my MEC insofar as any political initiatives are concerned. In relation to engaging business, what I am aware of, and I can confidently speak about those issues. I mean, there is a forum that has been established where government, at the political or the executive level, meets the business community, and then like some of the other provinces, I mean, our MECs that are responsible for particular initiatives were engaged in the respective sectors. And the business representatives in those sectors in terms of what any initiatives to strengthen the relationships are concerned. Chair, I'm just going to ask my colleague to just assist with some of the other questions that I remember.
Proceed.
Thank you. With regards to the question on the Western Cape economy and the numbers for the unemployed, the percentage is there, but to give the number, it will be the difference between the labour force of 2.999 million and the employed number, which is 2.386 million. So the estimated number of unemployed people within the Western Cape, taking into account rounding off, is 614,000. Stats, we get that figure from the Stats SA quarterly labour force survey, which does not provide this aggregation at the provincial level, but we do our own analysis, taking into account the population profile, as the HOD mentioned in our annual economic research, and looking at the previous 5 years, the breakdown of the unemployed does show a concentration amongst the colored and the African population, about 95%, about 50-50 split between male and female, and definitely a high concentration amongst youth, about 70% between the ages of 15 to 35. We even look at education profile, and then you can also see that about 52% or about half of the unemployed have some secondary education, and close to 30% actually do have matric. So we do take into account some of these the breakdowns with regards to that, and then link it into the provincial budgeting approach, where we can see that 70% of the budget approximately goes towards health and education, and definitely within those two departments there is a focus on providing services to the lower income practices in the Western Cape and the most vulnerable.
Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. Next question is from the questions around own revenue. And just to indicate that, yes, indeed, the province is following a more conservative approach to own revenue, but then also need to indicate that their own revenue budget is growing by 4.6% over the MDS. And some of the issues that we need to take into consideration when we do look at our own revenue budget is the lower than expected economic growth rate, which will have an impact on disposable income. A bulk of our own revenue sources is from tax revenue collection, and the tax revenue collection is basically depending on how much people can spend. So for instance, a huge part of that is gambling taxes, and that would purely be from disposable income. But also that we need to just alert the committee to the fact, and I did mention it in the presentation, that a part of our own revenue is also donor funding, the Global Fund. There's two huge sources. We were given support from the Treasury, also in terms of the General Budget Support Program, which we've added in there, as well as our Global Fund. And both those sources of revenue have come to an end, and therefore we cannot continue to include it in our projections moving forward. But indeed, the province is following a conservative approach to own revenue budgeting. Then, just in terms of the compensation, the purpose of introducing the upper limit and then appropriating it was to get to a more reliable COE budget. And I think with the efforts that we've, with the mechanisms that we've put in place, we actually got to a point of a more reliable COE budget if we take into consideration that the underspending was less than 1%, or 0.9% of the compensation budget we were unable to spend. That underspending can be largely attributed to the fact that when we introduced the ceiling, we reduced the maneuverability that departments had in terms of what they can fund. So we were taking it down to post level. So what needed to happen within a vote was that the department needed to establish some process to determine which posts they will prioritize and which posts then they will fill. And with that came a bit of a delay when we introduced the ceiling. Also, there were things that some posts we needed to advertise twice. There are people that leave the system, and then you have to advertise, or you would not necessarily have known about those. So there are reasons that we can provide for the 0.9% underspending. But the aim was to get to a more reliable COE budget. Thanks.
We'll present that to the Secretariat.
On the audit outcome, we know that there was a slight deviation in the public entities. However, the areas that were there, none of the public entities had qualified audits, it was all unqualified, and the areas that were impacted were either supply chain and non-compliant or predetermined objectives. It's also important to note that the issues that were raised were first-time issues and not old issues. So whenever there are old issues, we address that, and any new issues, we will address it in the next few years.
Treasury?
Second, I would say I'll comment on only two issues, maybe the issue of the immigrants from other countries. To say, I mean, I think it becomes difficult because some of them are not documented, but I would think that perhaps as a start, I would think that this matter must be escalated to the Department of International Relations so that within SADC, maybe when the SADC meeting, they discuss this matter to say how South Africa may be impacted by neighboring countries in terms of the service they provide, because the challenge is in some provinces like Limpopo indicate that half of Zimbabwe is based in Mustina, but they go back to the Zimbabwe, they just cross the border and go back home. It's not like they're staying in South Africa. So it can be difficult to account for that.
Like Fischbach and
And then the other one is the issue of human rights, which they, in our case, was seriously concerned to the extent that Ms. Melody is going to talk to the DG of human settlement, because we all view that the issue of just transferring money at the end of the financial year is not sound financial management. So it should not be encouraged by national department. So we should speak to the national department in terms of there must be proper plan. Even when you buy land, you must plan properly so that we don't find ourselves spending a quarter of the grant within 1 month. And we cannot even account to say what has the money bought cost to ourselves to other entities that have been studied. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable members, we appreciate the presentations made this morning. Just a few matters that we have to convey to Western Cape. And the leadership made an announcement. This country is heading for lesser rain because of climate change effects. We must accept it. I know what I'm talking about. I come from a region where we are dependent on boreholes and seawater that's been desalinated in Port Norris. When you erect clinics, hospitals, build new schools, see that there's a gutter, there's a water tank to harvest water. If you walk around Parliament, the water's running away. And we come one morning to our offices, you open the tap and there's no water, what are you going to do? Parliament will have to correct that. Secondly, the matters raised by the over emission question, and that's the principles. Good budget management, control must be strong, and good procurement. That's the message. That is the message. And we have to take unpopular decisions. Yes, you're on the MEC, you're right, from Malama. You won't be popular. The chairperson of finance, the corporations, is not popular in Parliament. Because when you visit provinces, hey, we want to talk to you on the sideline. As you've got a bag of money in your car. I go on, it doesn't work that way. It's budget processes. So we have to see what are we doing right, what are we doing wrong, and what have to change. And that message must boil down to all the departments, to the lowest level. The manager in a department must understand this message. Honourable members, thank you for your indulgence and your contributions for this meeting. We are going to deal with the minutes now, so we will release the teams that are here. Thank you for being here. For those traveling, travel safe. And thank you for the hard work you are doing in your provinces. To the Treasury, we are having the last province on the 23rd of June. That's case and end. It's a very important meeting. And then we will also, members, I'm going back to the research document. very important document, specific the audit report. You must look at that, because I'm requesting the secretariat that we incorporate that one as well in our report. I'm going to the minutes from the members of the 7th of June. On the 7th of June, briefing by the Treasury on the provincial budget and expenditure requiring the Free State. That's the only problem I'm preparing before I have to put it on the members, page 1. Etc. Page 2, that was the presentation, although we received the presentation in hard copies. Are you satisfied with page 2?
Yes.
Page 3?
Yes.
Can I get a mover for adoption? Mr. Bas, moves for adoption, the seconder? Hey.
Thank you, member. That's the business of the day. This meeting is adjourned.